Well, good evening and welcome to Monroe City Council meeting this day, January 15, 2013. This time I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if Edie, you would take roll call, please.
Councilperson Gary.
Here.
Cutterback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Present.
Student Representative Toronto.
Here.
Thank you. Please join me now for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, I would say that we're beginning 2013 on a very high note. And part of that is, of course, how we finished 2012. Part of that is one of the presentations that we will be holding. The highlight really of this evening is Chief Quinzer's police awards and recognition of many officers and the wonderful job that they've done for our community as part of our police department. What I would just like to say is congratulations to all who are recognized this evening. It is my contention that Monroe not only has a police department, but they have the police department of Snohomish County that is envied by many. And soon to be envied by all, I'm sure, as we hear the many recommendations and recognitions tonight. With that, then, I'd like to call Chief Quinzer to the podium, and the stage is yours.
I think I'll start over here. It's probably a little easier for me. Could I have Sergeant Darrell Johnson and Officer Scott Ritchie? Come on up here. I'd like to recognize, this is a letter of recognition. I would like to recognize Sergeant Darrell Johnson, Officer Scott Ritchie, and their assistance with an arrest that solved over 23 cases involving vehicle prowls, criminal trespass, and possession of stolen property. Many officers assisted with these cases. However, Sergeant Johnson and Officer Ritchie took the lead on case management, writing criminal citations, contacting victims, gathering information on stolen items and completing additional follow-ups. They both thoroughly reviewed the cases, worked with the prosecutor, and were instrumental in achieving a high bail amount so the suspect was kept incarcerated. Often these types of cases remain unsolved, leaving many residents victims of damaged vehicles and stolen property. However, due to the diligence and conscientious efforts of these two individuals, these cases are going to be prosecuted. Darrell,
I appreciate it.
Scott, congratulations. Sergeant Cindy Chessy. This is another letter of recognition. I wish to formally recognize Sergeant Cindy Chessy for exemplary service in child safety. Sergeant Chessy coordinated with a child safety advocate to provide officers and staff training on the risk factors associated with child deaths. At the conclusion of the class, she coordinated with the advocate to establish the Cribs for Kids program that will provide free cribs to citizens who have children sleeping in unsafe conditions. These cribs help establish a separate baby sleep area with a firm sleep surface, avoiding loose bedding, which helps reduce the risks associated with sudden infant death syndrome. Sergeant Chessy helped identify funding to make this program reality. The department has received numerous calls and has been able to distribute many cribs to those in need. Sergeant Chessy is to be commended on her willingness to problem solve child safety issues and for her dedication to the community.
Mm-hmm.
Officer Nate Erdman here. I'm going to read this anyway, but so that everyone's aware of it. Officer Erdman is receiving a letter of recognition. I would like to commend Officer Erdman for his excellent work with the recent arrests involving multiple burglaries with more than 20 victims stretching from King and Snohomish County. During the course of the investigation, he conducted 6 search warrants and recovered laptops, electronics, credit cards, firearms, stolen checks, and over 100 pieces of jewelry, all of which are valued at tens of thousands of dollars. As a result of his diligence, many stolen items were identified and returned to the rightful owners. Unfortunately, most burglary victims are not able to recover their stolen property. But due in part to his investigative skills and willingness to tackle these complicated, difficult cases, he has not only helped victims, but he has also prevented additional burglaries from occurring. His hard work and determination is very much appreciated. We have 2 sergeants, Rick Dunn and Brian Johnson. Should have said John Stone.
Right one.
After as many years, I still don't pronounce it right. Another letter of recognition. I'd like to extend my thanks and appreciation for your excellent management coordinating an area search on July 24th, 2012 for a juvenile that went missing from Fred Meyer. Missing persons flyer was quickly produced and shown to local businesses and community members. Shortly thereafter, a person who had seen the flyer saw the missing juvenile in SR2. The juvenile was located and reunited with his mother. I commend your quick response and organized plan that resulted in the juvenile's safe return. I appreciate your hard work and dedication. Thank you for your dedication to this family and the Monroe community for delivering first-rate law enforcement services. Another letter of recognition for Officer Daryl Stamey. I'd like to commend Officer Stamey for leading the department of the arrest of 39 drivers who were under the influence of alcohol and or drugs. Officer Stamey takes pride in his enforcement efforts, and we believe he has significantly impacted road safety for our citizens. He also serves as the department liaison for the Washington State Traffic Safety Council and serves as a drug recognition expert. He often works extra hours participating in traffic safety emphasis patrols. Officer Stamey serves as the department liaison to the Washington State Traffic Safety Council and the traffic safety coordinator often emails the department complimenting his positive involvement with the council. Okay, the next is also a letter of recognition. Could I have Sergeant Steve Klopp, Officers Tim Walker, is Jake Eric there? Javier Patton, Daryl Stamey again, Jason Souther. Okay. Are we missing anything? I'd like to commend the mentioned sergeant and officers for their involvement on August 26, 2012, responding to a drowning incident in Lake Tai Park. The scene was difficult as there was a language barrier between the witnesses and the police. Sergeant Klopp immediately set up a command post and began coordinated with witnesses to contact the family. When telephone contact was unable to be made, Sergeant Klopp sent Officer Stamey to the family's home in Everett. Officers Walker, Eric, and Patton continued to work with the witnesses at the scene. When the young man was located and brought to the hospital, officers went to the hospital to see what needs the family would have. When it was determined that the young man was to be sent to Children's Hospital, Officer Sabian was assigned to transport the family and stay with them in Seattle until such time they needed to retrieve their vehicle in Monroe. The officers continued to check on his status at the hospital. All of the officers on the scene acted in an exemplary manner and remained calm under stress. Due to the officer's extra efforts, the mother arrived at the hospital shortly after the boy did, and she was able to spend some time with him before being transported to Seattle. This extra time and care is an excellent example of quality service, recognizing our values of dedication and excellence. Please accept our thanks for your response to this tragic situation and your outstanding representation of this department. Okay, I have a letter of commendation for Officer Jason Southard. I'd like to commend Officer Jason Southard for his response to a drowning incident that occurred at Lake Ty Park, August 26, 2012, same incident. When Officer Southard arrived at the scene, the young man had not been located, so he removed his uniform and entered the water to assist fire personnel with the search. In doing so, Officer Southard performed his duties above and beyond by placing himself at risk. Not only did Officer Southard risk his safety, he went to the hospital and remained there to assist the family. Please accept our thanks for your response to this tragic situation and your outstanding representation of the department. Okay, the next one I'm going to move on to is the Distinguished Service Awards. And LaDonna? Is Monica here? How about Eloisa? Neither one. Okay. These are Distinguished Service Awards. They're not weapons, by the way. So. It is with great pleasure to recognize LaDonna Whalen and Monica Sandoval and Eloisa Rodriguez for their excellent, exemplary services in child safety. This group of individuals worked together to apply for a North Region Injury Prevention Grant to address serious safety issues regarding the improper use or non-use of child restraint systems in the Latino community. As a result of their hard work, they received the grant and began by conducting parent informational meetings. They rearranged their personal schedules to meet with approximately 150 Spanish-speaking attendees. Following up on their instruction, they conducted 48 child car seat inspections and distributed 30 new child restraint systems. This combined effort made this program a huge success. Their dedication and commitment to safety to the children is to be commended. And then next one is also an Distinguished Service Award and Evidence Tech Julie Stuglin. It's also with great pleasure I recognize Julie Stuglin. Since July of 2000, Julie has done an excellent job serving the citizens and members of this department. She's never too busy to assist someone or go above and beyond in the assistance she offers. Julie has done an outstanding job handling our evidence room, which is one of our most critical areas of high liability. In addition to maintaining the integrity of the evidence, she responds day or night to assist at crime scenes. She brings professionalism, attention to detail, and is a great support to investigators and officers at these scenes, even under stressful and difficult situations. She's been recognized by her peers as being an expert in her field and as an instructor in evidence collection and preservation. She also has worked as an evaluator and evidence expert with the Loaned Executive Management Assistant Program that will consult with other agencies by conducting a review of their department. Julie continues to cast the Monroe Police Department in a good light to all other agencies. Evidence technician Stu Lynn has served the city in an outstanding manner through a continued high level of service. And the last award we have this evening is a life-saving award, Officer Jay Tolbert. I would like to formally recognize Officer Jay Tolbert for his involvement on June 16, 2012, with a welfare check on an adult male. Upon arriving at the residence, he and Officer Ritchie, after receiving no response, forced entry and located a barely breathing and unresponsive male. He recognized the urgency in the situation and acted quickly by initiating CPR and working to clear his airway until medical help could arrive. Often officers are the first responders on the scene and have to administer life-saving aid until medics can arrive. It is his quick response in those first moments that are to be commended. You are what made the difference in saving this individual's life, and please accept our thanks for your response to this situation and your outstanding representation of this department.
Well, we can all go home now. That was awesome. Steve, thank you very much, and thank you to you and your leadership, as it's reflected very well and those who serve in this department. Again, thank you to those officers and representatives of the police department who were recognized tonight. I can't say enough how much you're appreciated on behalf of myself as mayor and as a resident here in Monroe. You are the police department to contend with in St. Louis County. And thank you for your service. I will, before moving on to the next item, which is going to take a little bit to set up, if anyone would like to sneak out, this might be your moment. We do appreciate you coming tonight for the awards presentation. No offense to those who are Thank you very much. Tonight we have what I like to call an introduction of an economic development committee in the city of Monroe. And before I have Jeff Sachs, our economic development manager, begin, I wanted to just point out that as I had done in times past, I'd asked or called upon council members to serve as an advisory board, so to speak, our mayor's advisory council. With the introduction tonight, I want to point out that I did invite council members Kemp, Gearing, and Councilmember Williams to be present as an advisory panel when introducing this or reviewing this program a few weeks back. And I appreciate their taking time out to do so. Tonight we have a presentation by Mr. Sachs and a couple of folks who have come from a short distance away who will also be sharing some information with us. But I can't say enough how optimistic and excited I am about this tool and what it might mean and bring to the city of Monroe as it relates to jobs and to business. And I'll leave the rest to Mr. Sachs. Turn the microphone over to you.
Awesome. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council. Most of the people that know me, I typically speak ad hoc, And tonight I'm kind of excited about this project, and I've actually written some things down, so forgive me for my reading of this. I did want to start it off, though. Some time ago, Gene introduced me to a friend of his, Keith Brock, and we've been talking about music in Monroe. And something that Gene and Keith both kind of imprinted on me was a statement that just because you're from a small place doesn't mean you can't do big things. And this is really what this project is all about. And so with that, the mayor and his advisory panel on economic development are very excited about the potential of this project, as am I. I've spoke with several potential users of the EB-5 program that live in Monroe. They have businesses here now and have received positive feedback. Several have indicated they'd be in attendance tonight. So this is about economic development. This is one more step. It's not all of the program. We still have to focus on wayfinding and downtown and North Kelsey and regulations and comp plans and all the things that typically we all pay attention to. When I receive phone calls from real estate brokers, typically the conversation goes something like this. So I have a user. I'm not going to tell you who it is. We want to buy a big building. What can you do to convince us to come to Monroe? Typically my answer until today is, well, we have streamlined permit assistance, we have great knowledgeable staff, and we don't assess a B&O tax. So that's what we have to avail ourselves. What can I do to help? Many cities offer the same thing, and typically those phone calls don't get returned. There's very little follow-up on those phone calls. We didn't get here by accident. There have been many attempts in Monroe in the past to improve our economy, all with varying results. The most memorable is the city's failed attempt at North Kelsey, think First Western and the Family Fun Center. However, Galaxy Theater was a moderate success. H3O is in the works and looks positive, and our utilization of our city park system to create economic events to drive tourism should be complemented for its ongoing success. We have partnered with other cities in the valley. We're working on an IPZ program to create economic benefit up and down the valley. Council has made the decision to fill my role. That happened about 18 months ago. I'm very grateful. Thank you. Based on the mayor's direction, staff has recommended to, and council has amended the city comp plan, the Monroe Municipal Code, in ways to be more permissive to business in Monroe. We're working on a sign code amendment that will help. The mayor has outlined a strategy, and Administrator Brazel has supported and implemented a new culture inside City Hall that is focused on customer service and problem solving. Staff doesn't say no anymore, rather we work in partnership with the applicant to find success. So why are we here tonight? We're proposing an additional tool to our economic development toolbox with implementation of a long-standing, established, and up to this time, historically underutilized federal program to bring capital investment back to the U.S., created within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and managed by the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service. The program is called EB-5. This program allows for the formation of a regional center. We're unique in Monroe in that we would be considered a rural center. And Jesse's going to explain what all this means a little bit more as we get into the conversation. We would like Monroe to become a regional center to attract capital to our community. Jesse Tam with MPI will present this program to you. There will be a PowerPoint presentation, but before we get started, let me expand on what will be asked of you, the City Council, should you like the concept and you recommend implementation. This program will require budget authority of $225,000. We will be requesting this at a later date, describe where the funds will come from, and how the project fees will be collected to repay the city investment. It's anticipated that the city will need to spend money up front, and the receipt of the fee revenue will come later. A couple of questions that I just want, that came up at the advisory committee panel, that I wanted to throw out first for you to think about during the presentation. Because the council members and the mayor have asked a lot of really hard questions. We've spent a lot of time getting excited about this and then backing up a little bit and then getting excited about it. But Most importantly, the question that came up is, where else has our regional center been established and owned by a city or a government body? This has not been done to date. There's been attempts at it. Due to the progressive nature of the program, many models have been used with varying degrees of success. It is very clear that where cities have been fully engaged and supportive, the investment dollars have been collected and the projects thrive. Where the municipality has interfered, the success has been much more muted. The second question is, who approves the projects within the regional center once it's established? Does USCIS review each project, or does that fall back onto the owner of the RC? All projects are reviewed and approved by USCIS. The owners of the regional center, in this case the city, will vet the projects prior to submittal to USCIS. Remember, any business using EB-5 funding will still be required to comply with our comp plan and our Monroe Municipal Code. I know you have questions, and I would ask that you hold your questions until Jesse has presented the program to you. And once Jesse's done, we'll avail ourselves to any questions that you might have. So with that, I'd like to introduce Jesse Tam. He's a principal in MPI. He's got a banking history in the state of Washington for 35 years, Jesse? Or am I expanding?
I'm trying to tell my age.
He came to us as an immigrant from Hong Kong at a young age, and don't hold the fact that he's a Boise State grad against him. He has two kids, the University of Washington graduates, I believe. So with that, Jesse, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, Mayor, Council Member, thank you very much for having me. Before I do my presentation, I'd like to take a minute to introduce my wife, Lily. She come along, because only serious man my wife come along, so. I also want to introduce a couple of my new friends. Very fortunately, I met this couple recently in Seattle. They just arrived here a few months ago from Beijing, China. Because time after time, people ask me, who are these investors? Who are these strangers going to come in this country? But you may feel really comfortable to have John Wong and Lisa Fong here today. They are perfect representation of 1.4 billion people from China. John, I both speak perfect English, so get to know them. John was the head of the corporate security for JP Morgan Chase. In Beijing, China. Responsible for all the executive securities around the world. And Lisa is in the trading business on her own, have a company in Hong Kong. Most recently, they bought a home in Bellevue, and they also now have an office in downtown Bellevue as well.
Thank you.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a quick video, which a project I have done in City of Oakland for a bank, most recently tied to EB-5 program, as a way to start what might be a possibility I could do for City of Monroe. And the video is about 7-8 minutes long.
Welcome to Oakland, California, located on the west coast of the United States. Which is, it's a short drive over the Bay Bridge from San Francisco. People know it as the San Francisco Bay community. The majority of the people here in the Bay area are also immigrants. And welcome to Gateway Bank. My name is Jeff Chung, President and CEO of Gateway. I grew up in a Chinese restaurant business in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I learned the value of teamwork, of accountability, of providing a quality product, and working hard. Teamwork was very important. I was the morning guy. My job was to come in and make sure the vegetables got planted, the soup stock was paid, and the meat was on the barbecue. So getting the right players, doing the right things, were drilled in me at a very young age. So let's take that into banking. I look for very experienced bankers to be part of our team. I want them to have grown up in a large bank where they get a vast array of different deals to look at, different responsibilities. I look for people who have done more than one thing. They're not just a banker.
to Ed McGrath.
Hey, Gateway, one of the things that attracted me to the bank was the fact that it was a local community bank. Having worked at large, multi-hundreds of billions of dollar institutions, this is a real opportunity to deal on a local basis with local clients as opposed to trying to be everything to everybody.
Gateway is a community bank that offers strong service to its local community, but also has a product line that has national presence. And because of that, we are able to serve our community and serve a larger market, which creates a unique opportunity for anyone who wants to be involved, because most community banks are limited to lending in their area. Given our program, our platform, we really have a national presence.
The management team here is very focused in on the relationships with their clients on both the banking side of the business as well as the mortgage banking side of the business. That's very different from our competitors in today's environment. We're also looking at the transaction versus the relationship.
I have spent a lot of time in real estate in the Bay Area. I provide a trusted advisor role. Our target is really the small, medium-sized investor in the multifamily real estate market. They're normally owned by moms and pops. They're owned by immigrants who decided to invest in real estate in the Bay Area. That kind of investor is perfect for us because we can have a wide variety of investor styles and property styles in our portfolio to minimize our risk and provide increased yield to our balance sheet.
I got a degree in international business from Nelson Treasury and Transportation in the city of Oakland. It's an international place to do business in. The Oakland Chinese community reinforced the culture. They carried on the traditions of Chinese people, meaning the holidays and all these things that we cherish so much. As far as properties are concerned, there's parts of China that you would have to spend $4.5 to $5 million to get a nice residence. On Oakland, you spend the same amount of money, you would have an even more spectacular home.
The San Francisco Bay Area provides a tremendous lifestyle opportunity for anyone who would choose to live here. Quite simply, it's the best place in the United States to start a business. Within 10 minutes of our office, we have the University of California at Berkeley, which is one of the number one research institutions in the country. Just 45 minutes away, you have Stanford University. Not only are there tremendous schools and tremendous educational opportunities, it has tremendous concentration of talent, tremendous concentration of intellectual capital. There's also one of the highest qualities of life you can find in the United States. There's tremendous restaurants, great art, culture. Within 3 hours from here, you can be in wine country, you can be in the mountains skiing. I mean, it's one of the few places in the world you can go from surfing to skiing in one day. And it's truly a unique and beautiful area. And Columbus is outstanding. It doesn't snow. It rarely gets too hot. It rarely gets too cold. It really is a beautiful, beautiful area. I mean, the San Francisco Bay and the vistas you can see from this area are outstanding.
California as a whole has one of the more robust economies in the world, and we're the center of trade and of commerce. It has all the port and the shipping and import-export business.
I used to be a port commissioner before I was a city council member, and I saw the tremendous potential for the city of Oakland port. Future trade here is with the Pacific Rim countries, especially China, because we know the future is going to be over there. Oakland has all the three major rails that the United States can reach to the center of Oakland, which is right next to the port. So it's just a really fantastic, big market. This is the best time to me to invest in Oakland, because the future of trade is just unlimited.
We are the center of high tech. We have a lot of innovation, and particularly, as you see, the green energy, which is also a big industry in China at this time.
I've been in the banking world, financial institutional world, since 1973. I have the responsibility for the entire credit portfolio, both loan generation side and the risk management side. We're able to establish proper controls, enterprise risk management, and grow this institution to a thriving community bank here in Louisville.
A bank needs to be part of its community. You know, we do that through just the normal helping consumers and helping businesses. But we take it a step beyond that. We believe very strongly in being active in our community. If you look at the activities that our entire staff engages in, our regional branch manager, Francis Chow, is a big part of the Oakland and San Francisco Chinatown communities. We led the project to put security cameras at the Lincoln Park Rec Center. It's the only park in Oakland Chinatown that provides outdoor playgrounds, community meeting areas. In our Oakland branch, we had a downstairs area. We leased that out for $1 a year to the Oakland Police Department. I personally am involved with Inner City Advisors as a portfolio advisor in helping job creation in Oakland.
Jenny Ong, Executive Director of the Oakland Chinatown Chamber.
And I'm George Ong, a practicing attorney in Oakland Chinatown.
What I like about Gateway Bank is that they give back to the community by participating in community activities.
I like the bank because of its reputation and primarily because of its personnel.
Frances and I go back over a decade. I first knew her when she started working at Gateway Bank. She's very involved in the community.
Working with people in a bank is the most important thing for me and my clients, as I represent a number of clients who in turn work with and deal with Gateway Bank. I'm a dentist, been practicing in Oakland Chinatown for 27 years. There are many reasons I bank with Gateway Bank. Gateway Bank has been a very generous bank. I would say the most generous bank in the Chinese community. For years, Gateway Bank has been sponsoring the Good Fine Chinatown project. Also, the annual Lions Health Fair, Gateway Bank is the only bank that has been sponsoring that community event.
As important as our volunteer activities are to the community, it's important to look at in our bank. We're also active in the community in how we lend and who we lend to.
Gateway Bank is important because it's been reconfigured under the leadership of Jeff Chung and has a whole new business plan for giving out loans to small businesses, medium-sized businesses. It's expanding, so it's hiring, and that's a reflection, I think, of the core values of being a benefit to the local community. 74% of our mortgage banking activity was centered around women and minority-owned mortgage banking companies. If you look at our commercial real estate multifamily lending activity, 85.5% of our lending was to women and minority-owned borrowers or for workforce rental housing. So the lending we do has been a big factor in the continuation of the economic recovery in our markets.
I bank at Gateway Bank because I know the people, and the people I trust. And I've banked at some large banks at a time when our deposits were substantial. I moved away from that national bank only because I felt that I didn't get the special attention that a smaller bank gives me.
We put money in the Gateway Bank, you know what? Because it's the people that work there, and it's just so friendly. But we have many choices. We don't have to go this one or that one. But we go to someone who's a friend, someone taking care of you.
Integrity. You have to be able to trust your banker. You have to be able to trust your bank. You have to be able to believe in what they say. So we believe in integrity. That's an overused word in banking, but it's what we're going back to.
我就想过今年银行这个申请，他们可以不单只是做投资移民，他们觉得是可以做投资移民，但是不需要聘请许多人的，这个是因为全国的移民法律里面的有一个特别的exception，因为这样子呢，今年银行它是一个地方可以不单只是投资，也是不用担心聘请雇员的事情。
I want
thank you for taking the time to watch our video about Oakland, California, and also for taking the time to learn about Gateway Bank. Thank you very much. Xiexie.
I want to make sure everybody understands that the program is not about turning the city of Monroe into a Chinatown. That is totally opposite. The next portion is going to be a PowerPoint presentation, which I have put together personally to help this program to be fully understood by people who heard about it and hardly have any clear understanding of the whole pictures. So with that, I'm going to give you a PowerPoint, which is how that program, EB5, could benefit the city of Monroe, we'll call it the Monroe Regional Center. And also along the way, I'm going to pass this little brochure to everyone, council member. This is not a project only in Oakland, California. This brochure is about a project in Washington, D.C., just so happened, this project is fully supported by the D.C. City Government for a fire station. Along the way, with multiple development projects surrounding the station being part of the regional center. Yes, sir. This program is about job creation. It's all about why this program hasn't been so attractive in the past. Until a few years ago, we suddenly hear about this 8%, 9%, maybe even close to 10%, certain part of the country, shocked most of us in this country. When we need jobs, we need economic growth. And understanding the changes in the global world, we have to find what happened to all the US dollars used to be plentiful in this country. Why suddenly we seem to be running a little bit dry, our liquidity is drying up. Well, if you understand this presentation later, then you see why suddenly we have gone through this process and how to take advantage of it going forward. This is a safe harbor statement. As a proper introduction of myself to you, I formed this company in 1991 called Mega Pacific Investment, a short name MPI. We provide strategic financial consulting services for a lot of companies, as well as banks and public sectors, getting more and more occupying my time this day. We experienced an EB5. Personally, I'm an immigrant myself, came over 42 years ago, and I thought I learned pretty good about this country. In my old age now, I'm trying to learn to become Chinese again because of all the changes going on. We raised capital. We work closely with the USCIS, which is United States Citizenship Immigration Service, and also understanding the cultural, personal aspect of the business. It's not about money. It's about how people can work together globally and connect with good people, good economic opportunities, and then we have good funding to do the project. And this is one of the reasons I invited John and Lisa to come along. As Jeff said, I spent about 35 years in the banking world, and the banking industry is still going through some difficult time. I have successfully opened 3 banks from scratch, so I have learned a little bit about money in this country, how to raise capital, how to build assets, how to benefit the community with the banking system. I also, because of my immigration background, I have helped many people throughout the years for immigration, and EB5 been around for some time, and I deeply involved in a number of projects. I speak the language, both Cantonese and Mandarin Chinese, so I travel to China almost about 10 trips a year. Every other month I'm showing up to get to know this new China. I'm also traveling around the rest of the world, connecting with the dots, connecting with people, understanding what happened to the US dollar. It used to be plentiful in this country, have suddenly disappeared in front of our eyes. And I'm very active in the community. I'm past president, past district governor for Rotary Club for 28 years. I am currently a parks commissioner for the city of Newcastle. So I'm very pleased to work with the city council in my role. Got an MBA in finance from CU, BA from Boise State, gone through a banking school in the University of Washington. Let me share with you about what is EP-5 in a general sense. This program currently is under Homeland Security, used to be Department of Labor. Under that, there is a new, used to be INS, Immigration Naturalization Service, now we call it USCIS, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service. Every year, that agency allowed 10,000 quota of visa to be issued. 10,000 families, not individual families, can obtain visa to come to this country based on certain criteria of EB-5. It's representing somewhere between $5 to $10 billion every year from foreign money coming to U.S. can create jobs, benefit the U.S. project. The past 20 years hasn't been fully utilized because, again, when the economy is good, the plenty of banks' money, nobody want to care about doing all this paperwork and do immigration work to get foreign dollars. But when the global economic change lopsided, suddenly we realize it's a time for us to open up our eyes where we can trade our money back and create jobs and opportunity and doing good things simultaneously. The Congress, U.S. Congress, this is the federal law, U.S. Congress approved the program in 1990, and it takes $1 million at a time, create 10 jobs to get a green card visa for a foreign individual to come over. They don't even have to speak the language. So long they have the money, create 10 jobs, boom, they can get a green card. It didn't work out too well because there was a lot of issues surrounding that at the early stage. Later on, the pilot program came in called Regional Center. Sometimes they call it Targeted Employment Area with high unemployment for only $500,000 for the investors, supported by also 10 jobs, but it's also direct indirect jobs. So the opportunity is affecting a much more bigger scale going forward with this EB-5 program. And the fund must be at risk. The people have to be, cannot just put in the bank and get a CD and get guaranteed return and get the green card. They have to step up to play, invest money into a new business. As you know, new business usually high risk. Even more than that, it has to be travel business to preserve some of the job. If the investment is not there, job could be gone. So for quite a while, we have many businesses that have gone through some challenges. Being a troubled business, need to have a job created or preserved. Opportunity for Monroe right now is to tap on this possibility to do a Monroe Regional Center. In 2010, we had only 1,885 visa was approved and granted. And you know that the 10,000 quota, only 1,800 were utilized. So billions of dollars are left on the table at the time. Majority of time is already dominated by the Chinese from mainland China, a little bit from South Korea, from Britain, North Island, China-born, Taiwan-born Chinese, India, and other countries. At the time, Chinese dominated for the group at 41%. As of last year, 2012, is only 70% coming from mainland China, and I'll tell you why in a minute. The approval rate has been really good. They don't add up, okay, because the application and approval and denials are all not the same fiscal year. So, but the percentage is what you care for, is around 80-85% approval rate. If the project properly presented, put together package well, and do due diligence, understanding the visa, the individual background of the investors, the possibility of proof is very high. Why EB-5 become such a huge demand in recent years and months? We heard about that from many people, starting to talk about that day to day, but very few fully understand the capacity and the story behind that. It has a lot to do with the U.S. economy. Since 2008, our economy is still in a little bit of difficulties. Our national debt is an all-time high, $16 trillion, when our GDP is only $15 trillion. I put this on the screen for a joke. If you're a taxpayer, you owe part of that $140,000 on your financial statement next time. The housing market is still challenging. Since 2008, we see a little bit of improvement, but it's still a long way back to where we used to be for the home we live. Huge deficit 7 year. In case you haven't been paying attention, we're still buying more in this country than selling. So we have a huge deficit. That means our finances are still leaking every day, and we've got more stuff in our garage. Unemployment rate is still hitting pretty close to about 8%. Well, I said that earlier. What we had before, it didn't disappear. It just changed hands to other parts of the world. Now, what do we do to find some way to get the resources back here? And the best way to do that is trade something we don't need. We have plenty for something we need, which is the cash and economic injections. Create jobs. So EB-5 is a possible solution. It's a window of opportunity, has been around since 1990, over 20 years, and is not a loan. So you don't have to pay debt servicing for it. Literally, like sound like free money. In a way, it is, because the money has to be staying here, part of the USCIS law, to stay in the program about 3 to 5 years. So a lot of things can be done with that kind of money during the period of time. The program has been around. There's no expiration date. Continues to go on for the last 22 years. With the exception, regional center renewed every 3 years. Currently, the term has just renewed in October last year for another 3 more years. And the Congress usually do it at the last minute. They want to wait until the last minute. Boom, we'll renew for another 3 years. This is the program also give a full opportunity for cooperative energy between private sector and public sectors. And for the first time, can join effort into create this synergy going forward. It creates jobs, provide new sources of funding. If your local banks or the big banks are not lending, where do you get financing from? So you got to find investors. And the Wall Street investors are not as many as used to be. The angel money is not here as plenty as used to be. So with that, we got to find where maybe the more resources could come in to enhance our value of living, our standard of living, and also helping us to bring our product to be more competitive. So when you have foreign investors investing into a product you do, chances are they buy from you as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit about money. I spent all of my life, growing up in a banking family. My dad and mom were both bankers, so I learned a little bit about money. I asked my dad, how come you don't, can you give me some more money, Dad? I need some more money to spend. And my dad said, don't worry about it. Money never disappeared. I said, what do you mean never disappear? Every afternoon, you get me the money in the morning, afternoon, gone. He said, son, what you had didn't disappear. It just changed somebody else's hand. Okay, I said, what do I do? Well, find some way to trade it back. But before you can trade anything back, let's figure out what we have in this world. I'm going to show you something really interesting here. Called global money, global currency. Everybody have a little cash in their hand or in a checking account. This is not CD. This is not real estate equity. This is cash. About $10 trillion every day flowing around the world. You think it disappeared to the moon, the Venus, and Mars? It didn't go anywhere. It's still in this world. $10 trillion. We have 7 billion of us in this world. So you would divide that, everybody happy. Plenty of cash, plenty of people. But if you go down the list here, when you look at two countries have the largest cash reserve today, the China and Japan. China has $3.3 trillion. Japan has 1.3 trillion. And you look at the population, China has 1.35 billion people. Japan has 128 million. They're representing only about 20% of the population of the world. They control 46% of the liquid cash. When you go down to a little bit further, you bring in the other Asian countries, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Singapore, South Korea, Thailand, and you bring in another trillion dollars, I have a typo there, supposed to be trillion, 60% of the cash controlled by 23% of the people in the Asian Pacific region. So, realistically speaking, where do we find the money? We'll bring up our popular and look over, wow, money is there, go find them and go get them back. And so, Why, how do we do this? Well, we have the other countries in South America, Middle East, Russia, India, Europe, and it's added all up. And I hate to show you that. United States covered up a little bit by Kurt's chair. it's $151 billion, which is for a population of 315 million. And when you compare to a city of Hong Kong up there in the middle part of that, it's only 7 million people, and they have $298 billion, twice as much cash in their hand than 300 million people. So now we've got to be smarter, figure out how we can tap on the resources. There are pros and cons related to this EB-5 program, and I want to touch on that a little bit real quick for you. No, nothing free in this world. There's always a price for it, the sacrifice for it. But on the other hand, if we can adjust a little bit of what we don't need for something we need, we can benefit from it. And this is applying for both US science and the foreign investor science. And most importantly, it's all about people, truly about people. People in this country and people who want to come to America, exercise the American dreams. Benefit for US enterprises is very simple. There are millions and billions of dollars in equity investment fund available for development today. They're low cost versus bank financing. They're available for 5 years instead of 4 years, but most of them actually more close to 5 years. And the individual who owns the operation, he control the company. You don't have to give up substantial ownership to the point you lose control of the company. You still control your company in US side. You do not have to guarantee the return on investment because it was against the USCIS law for the visa petition. And the future potential investors will possibly do more once they become investors of the project here. They like to learn about American way of doing business. They're looking for good partners, just like us when we do investment. We find good people to work with. Once the relationship is established, we'll create a lot more international talents and connections. What's the obligation to the project sponsors? It has to create jobs. Each $1 million has to be create 10 full-time employees, or if this is a regional center, it's $500,000. And you have to manage the money. You cannot just take the money and go down our figures and double it. You have to go manage it. You have to provide taking care of them just like any shareholders. You have to provide report to the investors because they are real people. They want to know their investment. You have to work with them for immigration process because it's a joint effort between the project sponsor and the investors who want the green card to stay in this country. So it has to be joint effort for the visa petition. You have to provide full support of that and provide reasonable return to the investors. And I touched on that a little bit. I spent the last 3 days talking with these two couples here. And the question they asked me is rather things we take it for granted. Where my kids go to school? They have two beautiful girls. Where might be the best place to live? Those are the things we take it for granted. But time after time, those are real human beings who come here, not because they just want to buy a green card. They literally move the whole entire family here. They are real people. They're looking for ways to connect. They're looking for ways to get good shopping done, where can they get the best food to eat. It's so wonderful to be able to work with people like that to come in this country, bringing the talents and the education, the knowledge on top of the investment. In time, both sides benefit from it. What is the investor benefit from it? Okay, rather simple. Opportunity for green card, and the whole entire family can come over, and they have to be children under 21 years old. And time after time, I met family in China, when a daughter or son hitting 20 years old, they're literally panicking. What am I gonna do? One of my kids gonna stay in China? So help me out, help me out. So you see a lot of young family with young children coming over, and you go to Beverly Square, you see them. You go to the school locally here, you see them spread out all metropolitan areas in America. They don't have to speak the language, and they don't have a higher education, but most of them do come in with good English speaking, good education, and bringing the talents here. Once they travel here, become resident, they can travel around the world much more easier. They can live anywhere in the 50 state. So to answer the question, if it's the investment into Monroe, they do not have to live in Monroe. But you have way to invite them to come in and buy a home, wonderful. They don't, they can, they have choices to live anywhere in the 50 states. They see the education value here in this country. They could also become your citizen after 5 years. And then they're also looking for other opportunity to do more investment beyond the $500,000 or beyond $1 million once they have the green card here. They have obligation. These people go through very, very gruesome screening process by the U.S. Embassy, U.S. Consulate Office, go through the, when they go through the visa petition, they have to provide police report, background check, everything, health check. So when they arrive this country, they are as clean as could possibly be in order to qualify for it. They cannot have criminal record, illegal past history. The documentation has to be good. The money has to be clean. Then they have to go through a process of moving the whole entire family over here. So it's not a visa, buy a plane ticket, and come over. They have to relearn everything for the children, to the home, to the job, and so on and so forth. Exit strategies. Most people can see that, understand that the challenging part about getting new business going in the beginning is the beginning part of it, is where do you find money to build it? The chances are if you can build it and you lease it up and you stabilize it, most banks will come to lock on your door. Time for me to refinance it for you because you got a lot of cash now. We can loan you money. So refinancing local bank is a great way to do that after the project stabilized. Replace investors with new one. We'll see continuous more people coming over. The project could be sold. The project could also sell to the foreign investors. Once they stabilize here, once they settle down, they want to buy their own business. This might be an opportunity for them to buy in a little bit more than just the investment. And then certainly a company can go IPO or earn a lot of money and pay the investors back. Those are just options. The proposal for Monroe Regional Center for Economic Growth and Jobs Creation. Why Monroe? Well, first of all, I just get to know Monroe matter of a few months ago. Honestly, I've never been here before. I didn't even know there was a city of Monroe here. but I came over, naturally, less than 2 months ago, maybe three months ago. I drove around the whole entire city. Just drove and drove around the city and get to know the city. Wow, this is a nice little town. So comfortable, like a rural area, like a country town, but it's only 20 minutes from Bellevue. And I couldn't believe that. And it's 20 minutes to Microsoft campus, 20 minutes maybe to Boeing plant up there up north. And you know, it's just what I call a hidden treasures. And then, all of a sudden, December, I came up here with my associate, Van Gumenis, this wonderful bodyguard I have. Van is a great friend. He's been telling everybody about the regional center because he's a true believer on that. I came up here, and Van and I did a presentation for a group of people from China. And it's just an amazing opportunity to see the excitement of a very short presentation, about an hour and a half, the energy of the Chinese side and the energy of some of the folks from the council. And I said, this is the time for me to bring this subject up. And it was just a gut feel. It's a great city council, great leadership, looking for a way to grow this city and also have a lot of opportunities and land available coming in town with a new freeway coming up and the proximity of the places which I mentioned earlier. The proposal is about City of Monroe taking the leadership role. I think if the city understands it, it can create opportunity much bigger than a project. Most of the project I have worked with is a single project, a bank, a manufacturing company, a high-rise building, a hotel, various projects, a single project. And they spend a lot of money for the project loan because they got the money, they're a developer, they can take advantage of it. But on the other hand, not every project is a big project. And if the money going to be spent as a city, we could take advantage of helping a lot more companies than one project. Multiple projects could benefit from it. So the idea is do a regional center for the city. If not the whole city, maybe a major part of it, that companies can benefit from the EB-5 program, bringing foreign investment into the funding of the project and help the economic growth. And I'd be glad to be the contractor to help to manage this project process for application. And USCIS will be the one to approve it. And we will manage it for the next 3 years at least to get this project off the ground for this city, to bring the businesses here, open the opportunity for jobs, and also the possibility of growing the population, utilities, and so on and so forth. If we do that, Monroe Regional Center would be the number 15 in the state of Washington. The big state, like California, has 61 projects. Florida, I believe, is 33 projects. But most other states have only one, maybe two. In the whole entire state. We have been successfully seeing many successful projects in Washington State. And it's a new economic engine for the whole entire area. It could do public projects, certainly do some private projects. So it can help a lot of projects that has been dormant for some time because they couldn't get bank financing. So we create direct and indirect job. And the city will generate fees and generate more visitors to come in here. Once the business stabilize, they create more business tax revenue. It's a long-term investment. It's a long-term benefit for the city. And if we're going to do this project going forward, City of Monroe will never be what I had feeding before. It will be loaned substantially in a global basis, particular among the investment agency and many investors in China and other part of the world get to know City of Monroe. So can you imagine they land in SeaTac Airport and tell them taxi, I'm going to Monroe. So that's the possibility instead of Bellevue downtown or downtown Seattle. The timing of this process, again, I skipped a few of the details here, not because of time constraint. We're hoping to engage this possibility sometime in the near future to take full advantage of the 2013. 2013 is the biggest ever between the U.S. and China for trade investment. There are a lot of issues on this end, a lot of issues on that end. If you go into to Google and look at news in China, there are a lot of issues. Changing governments, pollution problems, and educational issues, and we have our issues. We haven't seen any clear recovery of our banking industries. And the 10,000 quota last year was about 7. 2013 most likely will hit that 10,000 quota. We are not only getting funding from foreign investors, we are competing with projects all across the United States. So the timing is crucial to get it going. We'll assemble a team. We're bringing our business partners. We'll file the EB-5 petition, hopefully the second quarter of this year. We'll do the fundraising, the planning, marketing in China. We look forward to seeing the approval sometime the end of this year and funding to be released to the project sometime the end or early part of next year. This is the time for questions, and I also want to show you pictures. This group came over in December. I thought I would just relax in Seattle enjoying the holidays, and boom, this group showed up from China, wanted to see a project. So I came up here and took them to Dr. Habich home, and they had a wonderful time to listen to presentation, have good food and wine, and suddenly, well, let's go outside the back door. And they said, are we going to see a swimming pool, or are we going to see a backyard? I said, surprise, we'll walk out there, it's a runway. So this is totally unheard of in China. So they were really excited, taking pictures on the runway, and you don't see this, but there was a plane landing while we were taking a picture on the back. So this is kind of funny. So I'm glad you to answer any questions. I know you have a lot of questions. Don't feel bad.
I'll do my best to answer the question. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jesse.
Well, Jesse mentioned that, or why don't we go back to the picture, not because I'm in it, but just as it was. Some good looking folks in there, other than myself, but not that I am. That came out wrong. It's a great representation of the excitement and enthusiasm that exists in the Chinese market. As Jesse stated, these folks here came, and this was what I had alluded to or addressed a few meetings back. They began in San Diego, went to Oakland, San Francisco,
LA.
LA, Seattle,
and Portland.
Portland,
Seattle, the last stop.
And then, Monroe, which is very exciting. Originally, then we were looking at BEB, and why I say we've been looking at this or aware of this for some time. Originally, we were looking at EB5 specifically for the airport. And when Jesse came out, we said there's so much more available. There are so much more many options out here in Monroe. Let's take advantage of the regional center to include not just the airport, but identify and include other projects in the city of Monroe. While we are the, correct me if I'm wrong, while we are the owner of the regional center, we're not responsible for the projects. And the interaction between the projects and the investors is just that. It's a relationship between business opportunities and investors from overseas. We are simply providing a tool for projects or the possibility of projects to utilize what is available through this federal program. And so with that, any further questions from council or any continued comments from Jeff?
Questions?
Councilor Hanford.
Yes, thank you. Sir, are you going to explain more about what a regional center is? Exactly what we're looking for?
So what we would be proposing for Monroe?
Practically, yeah.
We've drawn up some maps. That's yet to be determined, but we would be basically encompassing the entire city of Monroe's boundaries as well as its urban growth area and planned growth area. So we've talked about a UGA expansion in the southwestern portion of the city. That's not approved. That has to go through the process yet. But we would map that as part of our application for a regional center. The regional center is just that. It's an entity that says within this geographic boundary, we can name projects that would be eligible for investment as a project. Each project sets itself up as an individual entity, as Robert was talking about, the mayor was talking about investor-business relationship. We were initially discussing 8 projects within the city. Just our conversations amongst staff and with Jesse and some of the business owners in town, I've identified 5 that seem very solid. And that's just in a matter of just conversation. We haven't gone out and actually recruited projects at this stage of the game. That would be the impetus of our efforts over the next 60 to 90 days as we pull together the full program, pull together the application. We would be actively seeking projects and looking for interested parties. Now, that said, that doesn't eliminate the opportunity for a outside business to look at Monroe and say, well, I want to expand my business. And in fact, I think we have a gentleman here tonight that would be interested in doing that very thing, bringing a business to Monroe. He wants to expand his business. He can do it anywhere he'd like, but this is an opportunity for him to access capital that has a lower risk and not go through the banking system that's a bit torturous right now. Put his business in Monroe, bring jobs to Monroe, And those jobs create opportunities for folks to live here, spins off tax revenue, and all the good things that come with employment. So the surprise may be who decides to jump on board and ask to have a project through our, and have us sponsor that project through our regional center. Did that capture the essence of your question? Or?
It's getting clearer, yeah.
Okay. This is something, and I think if, in my conversations with Jesse and with the mayor and the committee, we're evolving into this. I mean, this is something, this is a big concept. You have some initial reactions to what we're proposing here. You're trading citizenship for cash. That's a federal decision that's been made. And do we, as a small city, want to take that on? And we're not, you know, I don't know if any of you have been down around Quest Field and Mariner Stadium recently, but all the development that's going on down there, $800 million?
Yeah, I don't know.
Regional center, one of the most successful ones in the country. They're attracting capital faster than they can spend the capital. There was a new project approved in Everett just recently. So we're competing. And think of, as Jesse has explained to me, in China, where you have a very high number of high-wealth individuals that would like to get away from their country and come here and live. They want the freedom that comes with standing on a runway in Monroe, Washington. And when we approve our regional center, that light goes on in that investment community. And so folks will have the opportunity to look into our regional center. If we have three projects, five projects, eight projects inside there, it's a selection where they can say, I would like to invest in First Air Field, or I would like to invest in the new company that wants to build itself here in Monroe. And that's the relationship that Jesse would provide to us as he's working with these potential immigrants and investors. He would be helping them place their resources into our projects. One of the unique aspects of our regional center is the fact that the government is so involved in this. And perception is a very real thing. In China, the government is involved in pretty much everything. And so having a fully supportive government entity like a city standing and being prepared, I wasn't prepared for the reaction to having the mayor and three council members at this presentation with the investors out at First Air. They were very impressed. That was something that added credibility to their decision. And so we have this unique opportunity to not only help the businesses that are in our community, potential businesses that would like to locate in our community, but at the same time create this effort that gives them a sense of security. And on top of that, we do live in a pretty pristine place. The environment's fantastic. It is a small town environment. We're very close to the municipal, or, you know, the very metropolitan area. This would be a very interesting place, I would think, to come and set down roots.
Thank you.
You bet.
The types of investments also, Jeff has alluded to so far, could be new. It could be from somebody within the community itself who is seeking to build a business here in Monroe. Could be somebody from the city of Kent or Seattle or Everett or Bellingham who desire to build here in Monroe. We've begun the process, I believe. This is just, if we can use the analogy of a stool, I would say that this is probably the fourth leg of the stool that we have created here in Monroe to promote interest in Monroe for development or for business. And Jeff has alluded to a few of those, that being, one, first, our internal processes and our culture, which are two of the legs, and one being the IPZ and now the EB5. One of the things that Jeff has had a very preliminary or very very quick conversation with is a partnership with one of you city.
Well, that's one of my hesitancies.
Yeah, I know.
You hate to out anybody, but think of the city of Monroe, and Diane will probably shudder a little bit at this, but typically governments use bond financing to do government projects. We've talked about a campus redevelopment plan here. I've had several conversations with the new director out at Everett Community College, East Campus. They've been told by their board to look for a permanent location in Monroe. And so the initial conversation was, how about a co-location? What would happen if we built a campus together? City Hall, City Services, Community College on top or next to or adjacent. And do it in downtown Monroe instead of on the edge of Monroe. And the initial reaction was, wow, that would be really cool to get people downtown. And students are the ultimate lingerers. They like to wander about town, have coffee, and do things maybe a little different than coffee, and eat sandwiches and listen to music. It's good for our business community downtown. It's conceivable that the city of Monroe could have an EB5 project where our campus redevelopment plan, instead of going out to the bond market, we go to EB5 investors, and over the near term, 3 to 5 years, we build our campus based on EB5 money. And while we do that, we put together a funding vehicle to repay those investors at the exit point for them. So that's one concept. Multiple concepts that have come in. I'm so tempted to say a few names, but I just can't because they're not here tonight, and it wouldn't be fair to them. But it's a great opportunity for entrepreneurs that are scratching along and don't quite know how to capitalize their business. We're providing them a tool that they can utilize with minimum risk to the city municipal government. And I'm sure Zach and I will have lots of conversation between the time now and the time when we sign a contract about what that risk may be. But it's an investment that has a revenue stream, and it's conceivable that we make our application, say we go with 8 projects, have a year and a half down the road, we have a 9th project come along that's interested. We can have that project submitted to USCIS for admission, and we can charge them a fee if the initial 8 projects covered the initial $225,000 expense. Then we have additional revenue coming into the city. This is not a revenue-generating project as a project itself. What the city's benefit is it creates jobs, number one, and it does spin off tax revenue for our community. It does help us comply with our growth management goals for employment. It does add to that housing capacity deficiency that we have. It's conceivable that a large residential development project could apply for EB5 financing. So lots of different options. Again, this is our introduction to this. I have come to believe that this program has caught wind. International finance is well out of our control, but at the same time, this is an opportunity for us to capitalize on a very dynamic market, if you will, for this program internationally. I think time is now. And so the ask tonight is to have council direct the mayor to direct staff to work with Jesse to pull this together. And we will come back to you with due diligence, with a full presentation, what the contract would look like, flesh out the program in much more depth, and at that time hopefully have projects that are actually on board. So that's what I'm leaving you with tonight, and hopefully you will leave me with some direction.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Jeff, just to clear something up. So when I first heard this for the first time, and I heard Monroe's looking at doing a regional center, my instant thought was Monroe's looking at building a massive building called a regional center that's going to be a hub of activity, and that's not what this is at all. This is the the buy-in to take advantage of a government program that helps get investment dollars in your community. Is that
precisely?
Okay.
So I'll just to elaborate a little. First Air has very openly proposed, along with their project, may come a hotel. And that hotel wouldn't be part of the First Air project. It would be its own standalone project. So there's the synergies are already developing between two separate projects. So no regional center, just investment opportunity for two great businesses in our community.
Okay. And then if you could just explain kind of the mechanism of what this would look like from just the dollars and cents, or I'll just summarize it, make it very simple, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but this $225,000 that you're looking for, which is the budget authority, it's anticipated that local businesses will be contributing to basically get their projects into this program so that they can then be candidates for foreign investment. Is that correct?
That's exactly what we're proposing.
And the end goal for us is that the city recoups all of the $225,000 because other local businesses have put money in as part of those five-day projects that you're talking about.
Correct.
Okay. And is there anything that prevents any citizen from starting an EB-5 center or?
No. If you have somebody with Jesse's skill set and $225,000, you could go about setting up your own regional center. How successful you will be, again, there's in nationwide, there's a lot of these programs going on. And what some of them, about 80% of them, are the success, as I said, is limited. About 20% of them are fantastically successful, and they're attracting all the capital. And a lot of that has to do with putting the human component of understanding the immigration needs of the investor with good quality projects and having solid municipal support for the project.
And so is that what we would envision Jesse's role being, to help kind of the immigration side of it, the communication with foreign investors, kind of being that liaison for us?
I've come to realize it's a lot more than that, but it would also be preparing security documents.
Yeah.
So these investors are going to be selling shares in their company, and so there's a fairly substantial security document that will go with that.
And so I did some research this week, you know, just kind of looking into this a little bit, and, you know, one of the things I did is I just Googled problems with EB-5, and so could come up with some of the downsides. And the things that I heard are the problems associated with I decided I wanted to go start my own regional center, which is the things you just talked about, the immigration, the compliance issues and things like that. That was one of the issues. And so it sounds like that's what we're looking to Jesse for.
May I make a comment on this? During the project, we have to know what the upside, we need to know what the downside. And then me emphasizing what's the potential failures or problems of the EB-5. There are two aspects of that. One, this is a U.S. federal law, okay? This is not a easy money program. This has to be fully met with the USCIS, United States Citizenship Service. This is also a raising capital. It's totally part of the SEC rules. You have to do security law to make sure well built up of all this aspect in order to qualify the project to be approved for the regional center, and as well as meeting all the legal expectation on this side here without jeopardizing the project fundraising step. That's only half the story. The other half of the story is most people don't talk about it because they don't know how to talk about it, and I didn't mention a whole lot today, it just kind of touched on it. It's about the actual fundraising side. It's not about you carry a project and walk up to Beijing Airport and I'm selling green card. Anybody line up? Nobody will put a dime into you. They don't know who you are. They don't know what project you're doing. They don't understand your language. They don't trust you. Boom, blank. But why I go to China so often is all this relationship. Relationship in China is really, really crucial to do business. Called trust, called understanding and the environment constantly changing in China, just like here. We have our little issues every morning when we watch the news. China is the same thing. To be able to time the issues, crucially, matching up the window is what I do, is bringing the people together. Yeah. And the money will come.
And Jesse, the video was an example of one of the tools that you've taken to China and to potential investors.
Yes, the folks who came to Oakland, California, oh, I saw you on the movie. They became instant friends. And it's very interesting. The video serve a lot of value to sell what is Monroe is. And hopefully some of you will be part of this video. And you will be long to be a city council member. You'd be the mayor. You'd be, you know, the business owners want to see the investors come in, welcome them. And they, when they come here, they feel comfortable. I did not get that in California. I didn't get it in LA, but I come to Monroe and I got a wonderful, wonderful reception like what we have at the airport. And that's why they keep asking me, the folks who came to the airport, still asking me, when is the project ready to go? I said, I'm working on it.
So I'll conclude here in just a second. But that's kind of what I found was the biggest downside, was not having a partner like this and just being that any citizen can take advantage of this. So it seems like this is a more prudent way to enter into that, in my opinion. I also found out that it said that the President's Council on Jobs and Competitive has called this program to be radically expanded. So it seems like there's positive energy. And it also talked about Canada looking at a program, and I don't know if that's happened yet.
Canada actually is ahead of us. Canada had a program before our EB-5 program. Our program actually copied Canadian program. The only difference is Canada used to be about 20,000, 25,000 quota a year. Today is 700. So folks in China been applying for a Canadian green card, been waiting for 3 years with no response. And that could be happening in this country as well. If we wait for next year, maybe 2014, 2015, by then it's way too many projects around, and the quota if not improved, even with a million Chinese, today the million Chinese can write a check of $1 million any given day, and they want to come, but they would not be able to because of the narrow quota on the side. Canada, that problem. Australia is closing, New Zealand closing, Singapore, Hong Kong, some of the South American countries as well, European countries, all have that issue, just getting too many Chinese immigrants there. Everybody have a capacity. So before we reach that capacity, so we have to find some way to take advantage of it.
Councilmember Cannon.
Thank you. Like Councilmember Williams, I spent some time looking through the internet for examples of BB5 and some of the problems. But one thing I was curious about is how this would compare to some of the other projects that we currently have in the state. You said I was wrong. Initially, I thought there were 11. There are 14 currently, and it's the largest one in
America. The largest one in Soto.
Yes.
Okay, so how would this compare, just in general, just in starting off in size to the other 14?
Well, the project started such an earlier stage, which is about, they started early 1900s. 94, 95, at that time they were starting to get the program going in part of the regional center. So their name is better known, no doubt about that. But you got to give yourself some credit here. Very few government entities have stepped up to the leadership role. And because it's just not a culture here in this country, well, the businessman making the money and we have to do all the work, no, that doesn't sound right. So very few government entities in the past get involved in it. But today's different. For those of you who did not know that, 520 Bridge is partially funded by EB-5 money. And for the construction of the bridge, successful in some way, raised pretty good money, but they had to refund some of that because of the planning stage did not fully cover the payback strategies. But when you stay in Washington, And a few other counties and cities are all talking about it because they see the value to it. So, but it's still taking a process. Some of them take a longer time to digest it. But hopefully we have a team of people here in Monroe are able to understand the value of this city and take advantage of it ahead of time before everybody else jump in.
If I may, did you, as I might have understood your question, it sounded to me that you might also ask, how does it compare to the Soto project itself in terms of...
Or the other ones, let's say a smaller project or a smaller collection of projects, for the type and scope of the role would be... we would expect. So I assume we're not going to have an $800 million development.
Well, and
my backyard, at least.
If I could interject, first error, when we went out and saw their proposal, their full build-out proposal is investment of $30.5 million. Okay. So that would be the capital infusion to do their full build-out and create a marketable facility that they could then create exit strategies for the investors for. Another example of an EB5 project that you may have read about in the newspaper is the hotel that they're building in downtown Everett with the city of Everett. They put that out for bid, and that project is having muted success, I would say. So, and I'm not intimately familiar with it, but I do understand Everett politics a little bit, and I would imagine that has something to do with it.
But kind of where I was going along the lines of your statement with regards to First Air, that is, you have Soto, which is an $800 million project. Mm-hmm. The potential that conservatively, some of the numbers that we've looked at just with regards to, or as a result of some of the conversations that we have, is that there's the potential the fusion of investment dollars between conservatively $30 to $50 million.
So expect is, as I continue the research, I would go out and look for comparative projects within the state. I think there's one on Whidbey Island and or other states, just for a comparison of scope and intent and success. Thank you.
Now, let me emphasize this. A public sector is perceived to be higher credibility than a private project. A public entity could get credibility more to the project than just the private project standalone.
That's something that I found in the research that I made, is that some of the projects that did not seem to be doing as well as could in this local municipality was part of it. Was a great deal of the reason why, or issue as to why not, because the municipality was not cooperating with or partnering with the program. In fact, they were doing more to discourage it than to support it. Yeah.
The brochure passed around earlier. When you look at the front page, it has the seal of the Washington, D.C. right there. And that alone makes this project very uniquely attractive to me. I said, and also the people I talked to. Wow, this project is wonderful. Washington, D.C. behind it. Okay, so.
Another example of a local regional center is Federal Way. It was created 4 years ago.
4 years ago.
And they still have the same fields available as they did 4 years ago. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were excited about grabbing investment dollars, but they didn't have a solid proposal as to what they were going to do with those investment dollars should they be attracted. So in that case, the investor really had no performa to analyze. And why would you invest your money in a project that may or may not be successful? So when I say muted success, I think the essential element of really attracting the capital and having projects take off is a cooperative team pulling the wagon together and really, really putting it out there.
Sounds very good.
Thank you, Mr. Tam, for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Just a couple questions. So the investment of the initial $225,000, he asked a question, so that was answered. I would assume that would be given when the contract is signed. And then as we go through the process, what happens if it's not approved?
The funding budget is totally estimation at this point.
Sure.
Because a project of this caliber is not a one-man job. Required different type of attorneys involved, security attorneys, the immigration people, immigration for the regional center, immigration for the individual filing of the individual visa. There are various type of other consultant may be involved. If there is a substantial large development, sometimes there are other people involved. So at this point, I can't give you any detail without knowing what maybe other businesses come in. The funding expenses will be in stages. There is a chunk at the beginning because you have to engage for these professionals. But it doesn't mean we have to spend all the money and find out the project not approved. So at a certain stage, the project will be approved or not approved, or approved subject for changes. In the past, it's a year, 18 months to approve a project. It's on to 6 to 9 months the last year. Most recently, this entire operation in California is moving to Washington, D.C. with a message from the directors from the USCIS indicated they're going to shorten the approval process to 3 to 4 months. So yes or no, it would be much more faster than a year and the file is not approved. So it's a joint effort, it's a teamwork. We want to make sure we do all the work and make sure the project can be approved.
And out of the 14 that are currently in Washington, it sounds like there's a couple that are trying to get started. How many were you involved with?
Directly and directly probably involved in 6-7 of them.
Okay. And do you have your success rate or however many applications you have put in, what is your approval rating?
My approval rating is pretty much just
at
like
80%.
I'm not a Superman. I'm a human being. I go through the process. And this is not a Jesse program. This is an entire federal government program. There are lots of attorneys involved in it. All we can do right now is watching the progress in the last 22 years and continues to take advantage of it as a progressive law because it changes. And there are a lot of minor changes going on. Which job do you be candid? How many hours must be considered be full-time? Little things like this. Is a minimum wage okay? Does it have to be a $100,000 job? All those things are being answered along the way.
Out of the six or seven that you were involved in, out of 14,
yeah.
were they government-sponsored or were they businesses? Because it sounds like you could go both ways. It sounds like it's very helpful if it's a partnership and government is supporting this. But it sounds like a group of businesses could get together, hire you, and apply for this. So out of those 6 or 7, can you give me a little bit more detail?
As you know, American business is based on capitalization. You know, how do we maximize a capital return? So most businesses, if they go into a regional center or direct EB-5 program, they don't really want to share with anybody else. They spend a lot of money to get that approved. And historically, traditionally, government entities do not get involved in it, as I said earlier. But lately, the last couple of years, I've seen more and more government entities, state level, county level, and city level, are starting to get involved more and more. So there is no negative, but more positive, there is some synergy between the public sector and the private sector together. If the public sector can do well, if the private sector can do well, the public sector could add the credibility for even better.
Okay, and one of the exit strategies you listed in your presentation had to do with repayment of the loan back sooner. When you set the terms of that, is it when you do the original contract, is it later? And I mean, what kind of interest rates are set on repaying that loan back?
All the things that depends on individual business case by case basis, okay? Some owner willing to give a little bit more for the funding, some don't want to give so much. You're talking about providing return to the investors, you're talking about ownership, participation or management in some cases. It really depends on the individual business. which I have to work with each individual project to identify the detail. But the process from USCIS standpoint is, if today I'm an investor, I found a project from Jeff, say, wow, this is a good project, I want to invest. I put my $500,000 into a trust account. Jeff will call, coordinate an immigration attorney, or I will find my own immigration attorney and start file the petition for my, what we call I-526. I-526 is the form number, to file a petition for green card. So I could be in China today, or I could be in America as well. I could wait for it. It could be 3 months, could be 6 months, depends on the timing of the demand of it. Once it's approved, and I'll get it's online, check in online, I can sign on the file just like the attorney and just like the project sponsor. Everybody know exactly when the USCIS approved. If I'm in China, I will be very excited. I'll go to the U.S. Consulate office, light up, and take fingerprint, set up appointment for physical check. Then I will, at a certain time, bring my passport there. Boom, I have a green card visa to come to America. When I land at SeaTac Airport, and I become a what we call landed immigrant. It's a very exciting time, and I had that experience personally. First time arrived in America, and that was the beginning of my citizenship 42 years ago. That day is still in deep in my heart, and the day I swore in to be a U.S. citizen in 1979 was the day I'll never forget. I had just come down from Montana. I was in Boise, Idaho. I had a good friend of mine, he's a captain in the police department, and another neighbor is a captain for the U.S. Marine, came with me. It was a proud moment. I wish I had my movie camera at that time, but I couldn't afford it. Back to your question. I get emotional when I talk about things like that. What was your question?
I've forgotten myself.
It's by me. It had to deal with the exit strategy or the exit.
Yeah.
And I think an important piece is there is that once this project has been partnered with an investor, the city's obligation.
Well, and that was kind of what I was trying to figure out. If we have 8 businesses involved in this, and I thought I heard you say that usually it's one business who because they want to do the whole thing. If we have 8 businesses, and the city kind of partners with this and spearheads it and gets it together, what becomes our role after this is set in place and you're dealing with the 8 businesses and they might have 8 different exit strategies?
Absolutely.
What is our role?
You're, at that point? You have done a great job by then. You already gave them a chance to be part of this regional center. They legally can raise capital, $500,000 from each investor. They put in the money, as I said earlier. The money must stay in a business minimum of 2 years. The offering documentation could say that money must stay there for 3 or 5 years. It all depends on the offering documentation. Because some businesses think they can get all the money back in 2 years and pay back and then sell the company. Some say I need a little bit more time, safer, to work my way into the stabilization. It all can be part of this offering documentation. So the investors have a choice. You can invest in project number 1, project number 2. It's a free country. They have a choice to pick anything they want. And they pick the industry they are familiar with. They come from the restaurant business. They might like a hotel better than a manufacturing. And if they have never been on airplane, small airplane before, they probably don't know about anything about the first airport. So it's the choices you create for them. The best part of that is being market totally together. Suddenly, the investors will compare the project within Monroe, then come forward a project in Oakland, California, and Boise, Idaho, and Salt Lake City, and Phoenix, Arizona, and so on and so forth.
Councilmember McCullough.
Thank you.
Could you yield for
a question? Yeah, no, I'm
thank
done.
You.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm just curious. So is there any city liability to the exit strategy?
The liabilities is, as I said that to you earlier, the USCIS law said money must be at risk. The investors must understand that they invest.
Right.
They could lose a lot of money.
Okay, but here's a project. Here's the investor.
Yes.
And here's the city.
Yes.
How much is the city on the hook?
Okay.
Well, my understanding is zero. Is that correct?
Zero.
Okay.
Zero. That's you should have no liability whatsoever. You only create an environment for the business to come in. The business run them by themselves. They work with the investors. The investors evaluate the company, invest into the company. Mm-hmm. And if the company do well, everybody happy. If not, they lose money. The possibility is there. But it's between the investors and the company.
That's the key point, is the city is creating the environment. And the advocacy strategy is now between the investor and the project.
If I could, I just want to clarify one thing. There is no loan. That was your initial question. And there is no interest. You have bought a $500,000 share of stock in Project A. And the securities document will have some sort of pro forma return on that investment that may or may not happen.
Sure. No, I was asking about an exit strategy.
Correct.
They repaid that investment back with what was attached to that. Thank you.
It's all a part of the business plan, but again, business have a way to go one direction or the other. Nobody can guarantee. And
sure.
Part of USCIS law is not to guarantee the return.
Right.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. So, Jeff, just to oversimplify this, the $225,000 is the city, it's what the city would be looking for to fund the mechanism, the bucket, so to speak, that then the city would be going out and finding businesses to contribute and put their projects in that bucket, which then gives them the ability to go find these funding sources, negotiate exit strategies. All our involvement is the bucket.
Correct. I think that's very simply put.
And one thing that we talked about before as a question, and I know you don't like to get pinned down for answers, but I like to get those types of things. You have felt pretty comfortable that you've already got a couple businesses that have shown that you're very confident would be investing immediately if we move this forward.
Yes.
So the really what the city's at risk is whatever that number is, less than the $225,000, all the way down to zero. That's the line of our risk is.
Correct. If we had 10 projects, just to make the math simple, each one would pay $22,500. If we were only able to attract two, we would only receive $45,000 in revenue, and we would be on the hook for the whatever the balance is in that case. Now, that's one possibility. Second possibility is if we can only attract two projects and we're spending $225,000, the fee to get in conceivably could be $110,000 per project. And that would be the decision that each project sponsor would have to make. How much do they want to invest to get in?
Correct.
So it behooves us to find multiple projects. It also behooves the project sponsors to work with other projects to bring the overall cost down for everybody.
And it also creates an environment that you will have, as Jesse said, in marketing. And rather than a single project, you're providing a portfolio. And within that portfolio, there will be unique and individual projects for investors to invest in. So the likelihood that we'll see 8 hotels in pop up in Monroe is probably slim. We could see one, but what we probably most likely see is something that is complementary to the other projects, which it provides for a much more appealing regional center, along with the credibility that this center receives from the City of Monroe's support.
And then to follow up on Councilmember Cunningham's question about when does the money go change hands from the city to the regional center? I thought you had said originally that there was about $75,000 that would be within the first, was it 90 days?
I would envision that as soon as we sign a contract that we'll work with Jesse, there will be a $50,000 to $75,000 payment that would be required to get everything moving. The decisions will have to be made at that point. Do we want to put together the full marketing package, the flyers, the video, and that sort of thing in parallel with the application? Take the risk that the application will be approved so that we could be marketing the project at the same time. Jesse goes to China 10 times a year.
Yeah.
So he would have marketing materials to be talking to investors while we're working through the approval process. So if that took place, we would have to spend more cash. The budget of $225,000 would be the upper end. And again, during that process, as we submit our projects within the regional center to USCIS, we would be asking those people to fund their project up front. So hopefully we would have cash or revenue to offset the expense right off the bat.
So the program, what you're looking for, the program development and bringing us back something that's a plan that we could adopt, the high level is you're looking for the authority to spend $225,000 over a time period. At the same time, you're out finding investors to put that money back in to pay that back.
Correct.
And then there's a lot of other details, I think, I'm assuming, that would come through that plan. But that's kind of the...
That's the gist.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Geary.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Just a couple clarifications. So let's say there's 8 projects. All 8 of them are approved. All 8 of them get their funding. The regional center isn't just done at that point. More people can apply, and essentially can just keep going.
That's right. Once the regional center approved, all the businesses could take advantage of it. It needs to be submitted to USCIS for modification, and there is a form to be filled, supply information, and some small amount of fee for adding new businesses into regional center.
So no limit, essentially. I mean, if there's a fee, they can another project can come in, and if it works, it works.
There is a limitation in the size of the city.
Size. Yeah. Who knows what the project may be, but there could be a small one, a big one.
Yeah.
It's not limited to 8, I guess, is what I'm saying. Whatever we think it might be.
Definitely.
Indeed.
And today, there actually businesses go in there to existing regional center and pay a substantial fee to be part of that regional center.
So, and that's once our initial... I guess that was my second point, and Councilmember Williams had just said as well. If you're looking for budget authority, you're not going to write some $225,000 check tomorrow. That's
not what you're talking about. No, it's conceivable that $225,000 would be spent and there'd be no revenue. I think you have professionals involved in this that would put the brakes on well before that ever happened.
There are a couple of things that really I had the benefit of hearing this before, but there was a kind of example you used. When this regional center starts, we literally almost show up on a map. All of a sudden, there's this, we're like this blinking light. Hey, we're new, which immediately draws it to what's this new one all about? And there being a map guy, that's an attractive thing. We've, for years, have been trying to figure out how to, we've got all these great ideas, but where do we get the money from? So when we started looking into this, like the others did, started getting pretty excited about the possibilities from that standpoint. I think the... what sticks with me as well is the American dream side of it too for people that come here. And I think you had made the comment before. It's almost, that's still alive and well, but it's a bigger deal outside of the United States.
Yes.
And that there's something about that providing that opportunity, and yet a great way to invest and get the things done here that we've wanted to see done here for a really long time. Jobs, too. I was thinking about that as well. The idea of Monroe as a jobs center and this kind of moving towards that direction was also something that was really attractive to me. And then, there's a little, there is a risk. And I thought, you take a risk getting out of bed every day, quite frankly. So driving to work, you take a risk. To me, when I look at this, there's an opportunity where we might not actually, we could actually spend pretty much zero. I mean, just with the authority, if people are paying in right off the bat, there may actually be no, at least there's a possibility of actual no expense whatsoever as we move forward with this based on the timing.
So correct.
That is also very attractive, which reduces the risk as well. The number was a little daunting at first, $225,000.
Yeah.
I kind of see it as our job as a city to help create an environment where business can be profitable. It makes our city attractive. I look at this, the benefits of it, as we've discussed, weighed against the risks, to me make this something that I'm certainly very interested in moving forward with. I don't know if we had recommended action, but if there's something that needs to be done to move forward, I'd certainly like to at least move forward with that. Not cutting off discussion, of course, but certainly we should move forward.
Sir, we're going to ask tonight, and that's what we're here for, either by consensus or by motion to direct staff to proceed with program development, at which time we'll bring back to council a fully developed plan for adoption, which will include an agreement between yourselves and Jesse and his organization, along with a few other things. We didn't put a timeline on that, whether it be 30, 60, 90 days, because there are several moving point parts that are involved in that, but certainly we are hoping that from what council has seen tonight, from the information that Jesse has shared this evening, from the interest that has been, or at least we can perceive just from visitors who are here this evening from out of town, our hope is that the council would provide staff with that support to move forward and then to return with the program in whole. At which time we'll also be seeking the approval for the $225,000. We hope that that will be much less, because by then we will also have some projects that have already written check, so to speak, and which Councilor or Mr. Sachs has already alluded, there is a great deal of interest. So with that, to answer your question, either consensus or a motion to direct staff to proceed with program development and bring council a fully developed plan for adoption at a later time.
So moved.
Second.
Motion been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Gamble to direct staff to proceed with program development and bring council a fully developed plan for adoption. We will do our very best to work through those details and bring them back as quickly as possible, giving the optimistic outlook and potential benefit that this program will have on our economy here in the city of Monroe. With that, I just want to say in closing, thank you to Jesse for coming, to his lovely bride who is here this evening, to our guests, our honored guests who have come from out of the city to be part of tonight's meeting and discussion. At this time, seeing no lights and hearing no other comments, I'll go ahead and ask for a vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Jeff, you got a lot of work ahead of you.
Thank you.
You can start now. with that said, we were 5 minutes over what Mr. Sachs said we would need tonight. And so I imagine there might be a few people who are a little antsy and might need to take a break. And so we will do that. We will have a very brief recess so people can get resituated. We'll do that for 4 minutes. Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. I had to run to my office and grab a couple of cards. Very good. Appreciate your support there, Council, bringing that back for further discussion and movement. Want to move on here in the agenda, and I believe that the rest of the night will go a little bit more quickly. The next item on our agenda this evening is a public hearing, and this is an interim ordinance, chapter 18.70, related to marijuana. Mr.
Thank you. Then we'll not see if anybody signed up to speak at the public hearing. No one had signed in.
Oh, gotcha.
So, City of Monroe established a moratorium on medical cannabis planting burns in December 2011. And after extending that in June, that moratorium expired in December 2012. And at that time, Initiative 502 had passed and had become law. And at that time, we had had that to take care of. So we instituted interim regulations in December of 2012 that prohibit the establishment of medical cannabis collective gardens and then allows in certain zones the production, processing, and retail sale of marijuana if it complies with licensing requirements by the Washington State Liquor Control Board. And as we did that as an emergency measure, we're required by state law to have a public hearing on that within 60 days of passage, and this is within that 60 days, so we're having a public hearing. There is no action that's required to be taken by the City Council at this time. If the Council would like, they could direct City staff to prepare additional findings of fact to adopt in relationship to this ordinance, or just do nothing, and then this ordinance is in effect for 60 days is an interim ordinance, and we will be having another public hearing in May, at which time you can decide whether you would like to extend it, some other regulations or directions that started up from the state, or come up with new regulations or just get rid of them. So, okay, that's it.
Well, at this time then, we'll open the public hearing to receive public comments. We don't have anybody signed up, but if there's an individual here in the audience who would like to do so, as always, I open that up to audience members. And I would ask that you approach the podium and provide us with your name and address for the record.
Hi, my name is Joel Phillips, and I live at 505 Circle Drive, Monroe, Washington. And I feel like until federal law changes, you guys shouldn't take any action upon this. And I'm speaking my piece now, and thank you.
Thanks, Joel.
Thank you.
Anybody else would like to address this issue with council this evening and part of the public testimony portion of this public hearing? Right, seeing none, then I would entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Cutaback and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing. Council, anything? Okay. Seeing no lights, would entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Williams to close the public hearing.
Davis. Ms. Friday.
I don't know. They know that was. The seconder was Councilmember Davis. My apologies. All right. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Council, any direction for staff? Councilmember Williams?
Yeah. Brad, can you just clarify, if we take no direction, then this ordinance is just an interim ordinance?
It expires on the 5th of June 2013, at which time we'll have to come back to you to either extend it for an additional time while the state is still figuring out what the process is going to be, or you can direct staff to take it to the Planning Commission to go through the process to establish permanent regulations.
So because we don't have permanent regulations in there and we're in kind of a state of flux, does it make more sense? Seems like it makes more sense to leave this as an interim ordinance. So I guess that would be my vote, that we do nothing and just have an interim ordinance.
Right. I see a lot of nodding heads, and so we'll take that as direction to bring this back in June, or we'll see you back
May.
Back in May.
Before, yes. Yeah.
Before May.
Yeah. Before June.
Okay. All right. All right, that matter is now closed. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, and that is comments from citizens. This time is set aside for citizens to speak on any council or to council, city council, on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We'd ask that you provide your name and address for the record, and please limit your time to 5 minutes. We do not have anybody signed up this evening. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address council at this time? I see no one. We will move on to the consent agenda. And I believe there is more than two items. Councilmember Gamble, I'm assuming you will be asking for 2A.
Correct.
All right. We shall move, remove 2A. And Councilmember Kebeck.
I need to pull 4.
Oh, yes. Okay. That makes sense.
And I'm going to exit. So I just wanted to say for the record that it is an agreement between the city and the Muckle TOY. I never saw any of the arrangement, never was even aware it was going to be on the agenda. It has nothing to do with my area of supervision. It's a completely separate Y, but it is in the Snohomish County. So I will recuse myself.
Out of an abundance of caution?
Addition, yeah.
All right. Who wants to go first? Ladies first or men first?
That means Jason first.
Okay.
And for ladies.
Ladies.
Wow. Okay, then do we have a motion to approve consent agenda items 1, 2B, 3, and 4?
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Davis.
I was just thinking that Councilmember Gamble might want to just a protest vote no on this based on the comments. It will still pass pretty well, I think. So hey, I just want to throw that out there.
Okay. I know there's a lot here on consent today. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Okay.
I'll get the lady.
All right. Let me show that Councilmember Gamble is now leaving the chambers out of abundance of caution, since one of the payroll or bill items relates to the company that he works for. And then Councilmember Kedebeck has now returned to the chambers. So do I have a motion to approve consent agenda item 2A?
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Kedebeck to approve consent agenda item 2A. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Councilmember Gearing, would you mind having
that? Thanks, John.
All right. First item under final action is hiring freeze lift and approve filling of desk job support technician position, and that will be presented tonight by Mr. Ward.
Mimi, as you most of you will remember, a few years ago we decided to contract out our desktop support staff due to our budget issues. Now we're coming to the time where that person's been in our, been working with us for about 2 years. If that person moved on, it's really a lot would be lost in training. I think our budget's a little bit more stable. So what we're asking for tonight is for you to move from that contractor position to a full-time employee. It would save the city conservatively about $5,000 moving this from a contract to a full-time employee. And also, we would have to retrain somebody by moving this contractor in-house. Questions?
Yes, Councilmember Kedebeck.
Thank you. Ben, does that include benefits?
That's full boat.
Okay. And what was budgeted for in 2013? Was it to keep contracting, or was it for an employee?
We budgeted it as a full-time employee.
Okay. So that's what was budgeted?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Hanford?
Motion to lift the hiring freeze and approve the desktop support technician position.
Second.
Motion's been made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Jones to lift hiring freeze and approve filling desktop support technician positions. Any other comments or questions? Seeing no lights here, no statements. We'll take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Second on the agenda this evening under final action is consideration of hearing examiner's recommendations for Cable Park Shoreline conditional use permit. Mr. Feilberg will be presenting, but prior to that, we'd like the city attorney to provide some parameters under which the closed hearing can close. Attorney Lill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a closed record proceeding for you to consider the hearing examiner's recommendation of approval for the East 308 Boat Park facility. The proposal in question, the scope of your jurisdiction tonight extends only to the shoreline conditional use permit request that had been submitted by the applicant. This is a quasi-judicial matter, and as a result of that, the appearance of fairness doctrine does apply to this proceeding. For the record, I will briefly explain the purposes of the doctrine, and then in the interest of time, I'll all of the appearance of fairness disclosure questions, and if no council member answers yes or affirmatively, it will just be assumed for the record that there is no conflict or no issue that needs to be further discussed. The appearance of fairness doctrine is a Washington land use legal doctrine requiring that quasi-judicial proceedings be fair not only in fact but also in appearance. At the commencement of the proceeding, the council must be informed that the standard of this doctrine is whether a disinterested person being appraised of all relevant facts would be reasonably justified in thinking a particular decision maker's interest or involvement in the matter may affect his or her judgment. Council is hereby asked the following questions for the record. Does any council member have a financial interest in the project or the underlying property? Does any council member have a family member who is a party of record? Does any council member have a personal or familial employment or other business relationship with any party of record? Does any council member own property within 500 feet of the project site? Is any council member aware of any other personal interest or involvement with the project, the parties of record, or the property that should fairly be disclosed? For the record, no council has indicated an affirmative response. The second series of questions deal with the issue of impartiality. Is any council member aware of any personal bias for or against any party or for or against the project as a whole? Has any council member prejudged any of the issues that are implicated in tonight's proceeding? Has any council member not reviewed the record materials for this project? Is any council member aware of any reason why he or she would not be able to perform his or her duties in an objective, impartial, and fair manner? The record should show that no council member has answered affirmatively on that set of questions. The next series of questions deals with the issue of ex parte communications. Has any council member had ex parte communications regarding this project while the proposal has been pending before the council, i.e. since the date of application?
Councilmember Hedebeck.
I asked Brad a question right before the meeting, which he did not answer. So that...
And thank you for that disclosure. For the record, communications with staff are not considered prohibited ex parte communications. Okay. The law technically prohibits communications with any of the other parties of record, i.e. the applicant, opponents, appellant in the CEPA proceeding down below. And it appears from the council's responses that there have been no communications to that effect.
Councilor Williams?
Yeah. I don't know if this applies. I said hello to them during break. So,
and since that communication disclosure did not involve the substance of the matter at hand, I think that disclosure is always a good idea, but I don't believe that that is necessarily required here. At this point, The floor should be open for any party of record to formally challenge the participation of any council member based on any responses that have been given here tonight, specifically including but not limited to any of the ex parte communications that have been disclosed. It is important to emphasize that pursuant to RCW 4236080, appearance of fairness challenges are waived unless they are promptly raised when the reason for the alleged disqualification becomes known. Please let the record show that no member of the public has voiced a challenge at this point. Under the city's procedural regulations, the City Council's review of the hearing examiner's recommendation is a closed record proceeding. The Council should accordingly base its decision exclusively upon information contained in the administrative record that was created before the hearing examiner and should not consider other factual evidence. The basis and standard for approval is that set forth in the Monroe Municipal Code and is recited in the hearing examiner's decision. Those are the legal criteria that the council should consider and should not consider the other elements that were before the hearing examiner, i.e. the SEPA appeal and the underlying shoreline substantial development permit. Neither of those components of the project is properly before the council. The council's jurisdiction extends only to the conditional use permit that has been recommended for approval by the examiner. Unlike an administrative appeal proceeding, there is not a presumption of validity that applies to the examiner's recommendation. The examiner's recommendation is advisory only. It is still incumbent upon the council to make the decision that you feel is best and is supported by the city's regulations and the administrative record in rendering your decision. And with that, council, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The city has received an application from H3O Development to construct a cable wake park facility and pro shop at Lake Tai. The project is to build the cable wake park wakeboard circuit supported by six towers in the beginning of the cable line supported by two towers in the southern 17 acres of the lake. The wakeboard circuit will also include trick features. The proposal also includes the construction of a 2,500 square foot pro shop to house the ticketing, rental sales, restrooms, lockers, and sports retail shop and multi-purpose room, and the office for the operation. Dock and viewing areas and expanded parking, grading and utilities and landscape enhancements and signage are also included in the project. A public hearing was held by the hearing examiner on November 16, 2012 regarding the shoreline substantial development permit, the shoreline conditional use permit, and also the SEPA threshold determination appeal. On December 11th, 2012, the hearing examiner approved with conditions the shoreline substantial development permit. That decision was final. The hearing examiner also recommended that the council approve with conditions the shoreline conditional use permit. If approved, the shoreline's conditional use permit will be forwarded to the Department of Ecology for their final decision. The hearing materials were available online for the council to review, and I think that's it. And now's the time for you to discuss amongst yourselves how you feel about this project and decide what direction to give staff.
I think what Councilmember Pettit.
Thank you. So I have a question. I just want to be clear. So it's only the conditional use permit, even though this opinion covers the other sections too.
That's correct, Council.
So
the SEPA issue has been determined by the hearing examiner, and the shoreline substantial development permit is appealable directly to the hearings board.
Okay.
But under state law and under your local regulations, the City Council itself has a reserved final authority under shoreline conditional use permit issuance. So the examiner's decision in that specific context was couched as a recommendation rather than a final decision. You can consider all elements of the record below, but you should be basing your decision tonight only on the criteria for CUP issuance.
And he states his rationale and under C, basically,
yes.
Under that? Okay.
I believe it's pages 20 through 25 of his
sure.
decision.
Okay, even though the facts on record are previous. I mean, you can consider those, but we're...
Absolutely. It's certainly appropriate for you to consider the facts from the other parts of the decision, the criteria and his analysis and recommendation regarding the CUP on pages 20 to 25.
Okay. And then depending, no matter what happens here, it still goes to Department of Ecology.
Correct. My understanding is that the entire package is bundled, both the shoreline permit and the CUP, once the city issues it, sent off to the Department of Ecology for its review. And I believe it's appealable at that point to the Shoreline Hearings Board.
Okay. Thank you.
So I'm going to throw this out here. Next steps. Next steps at this point would be to accept the hearing examiner's recommendation to council and direct staff to provide a resolution that we would then forward to the Department of Ecology in support of the hearing examiner's recommendation. Approval. So, motion would be accept hearing examiner's decision and direct staff to draft a resolution to forward to the Department of Ecology.
So moved.
Second.
I don't know what I said, but there was a motion that was approved by Councilmember Gearing and Councilmember Hanford to accept the hearing examiner's recommendation and to direct staff to create a resolution that will then be directed or forwarded to the Department of Ecology. Councilmember Kennebec.
Thank you. To remain consistent with my issues that I had brought up with the project previously, I will not be voting for the motion. If you look on page 20 under C, under the conditional use permit, listed that it has to be consistent with the policies of the Shoreline Management Act and the policies of the master program. B, the proposed use will not interfere with the normal public use of the public shorelines. C, that the proposed use of the site design of the project will be compatible with other permitted uses within the area. And D, that the proposed use will cause no unreasonable adverse effects to the shoreline environment designation in which it will be located. I find that there will be negative effects in those areas with this project. Remains consistent when the project was brought up and I expressed concern under the compatible use with the fishing and the swimming and the events that we have and people's use of going down and fishing at any time during the summer. So I will not be voting for the motion.
Okay, seeing no other lights or any other comments, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Right, motion passed with Councilmember Kennebec in opposition. Mr. Fowler, in anticipation of the action.
No, it wasn't anticipating. We're just really quick.
I'm sure you just typed that up right now.
Council, Mr. Feinberg has just created in a few seconds that he was sitting at his desk with the resolution 2012 with the item number to be added. He's proposing, or I am proposing, that the council add this to the agenda this evening for action. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motions are made by Councilmember Camp and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to add the resolution to this evening's agenda. We'll put it in place at this very moment. And ask Mr. Feiler to review the resolution, if you would.
And it's resolution 2013/03. Basically, this resolution is a resolution by the Monroe City Council adopting the hearing examiner's findings of fact, conclusions of law, recommendations, and conditions of approval for Shoreline's conditional use permit SLCU 2012-01 for H3O development. Basically lays out that the hearing was held, the City Council has reviewed the hearing examiner's decision, looked at the record, and approves the conditional use permit with the findings that are attached, and also the the conditions of approval, such as all development is going to be in accordance with the mitigation conditions listed in the mitigation determination of non-significance. All the development will be in accordance with the approved site plans per Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 18.82. The authorization to conduct construction activity is valid for 5 years, and that can be extended for 1 year by the hearing examiner. The applicant cannot commence construction until 21 days have elapsed from the date of transmittal of the Department of Ecology's final decision on the Shoreline's conditional use permit. The applicant shall install bird diverters or the avian deflectors that were discussed as part of the public hearing, and that the applicant shall also comply with all applicable local, state, and federal laws, regulations, and rules.
All right, for the record then, I will entertain a motion to approve resolution 2013-003.
So moved.
Second.
Motion is made to approve resolution 2013-003, and for the record, I'll have the city attorney read the official title.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A resolution for the Monroe City Council adopting the hearing examiner's findings of fact, conclusions of law, recommendations, and conditions of approval for Shoreline Conditional Use Permit SLCU 2012-01 H3O Development.
Councilmember Pettibetti.
I'm waiting for the motion.
There has been a motion.
No, I know. But I'm not saying it. Oh, did you press my button?
No, I did it.
Oh.
I figured you were in there.
What have I not said?
Okay, there you are. Very good. Thank you very much. All right, any other comments or questions? All right, seeing no lights, hearing no comments, take the vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. Councilmember?
No.
Gotcha.
I couldn't give the second.
The?
Second.
Councilmember Hanford.
That wasn't Campford or?
Gamford.
Gamford.
Gamford. Council, thank you very much. We will be forwarding this on to Okay, we shall move on then to the next item on the agenda, and that is appointing city representatives to various boards, committees, and forums, the first of which is the mayor pro tem. Pretty in the interest of time, you want to just shoot right into it and go right there? All right, Administrator Bradlow.
Thank you, Mayor. The only comment that I do have this evening is in regards to the Community Transit Board of Directors. Currently, we have Councilmember Camp listed on that. And what the board prefers is to have a council member present the year prior to the actual appointment to the committee. So, at any rate, what that would mean is somebody on the council would have to attend those meetings in 2013. To possibly be on the board for 2014. The only issue I see with that is we do have elections coming up, and somebody that could be appointed now may not be here after the elections in 2013. So just keep that in mind. He did have a conversation with the Community Transit Board, and so she does have further details if council has questions.
All right. With that, we will move to the first of which is Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I'd like to nominate Councilmember Guerin, who has shown his expertise in the last 2 years.
I appreciate that. I'm going to respectfully decline. I do appreciate that. Thank you. I've had the opportunity to do it for the last 2 years, and I think it's time for somebody else to have a shot. I already did the same thing a couple of years ago, and it's an opportunity that hopefully as many people as possible can have. So I do appreciate that. but I will respectfully decline. I might actually suggest that you maybe nominate Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I would like to change my nomination to Councilmember Williams.
I'll second that.
Second. Yeah. Motion is made by Councilmember Kim. Second, close tie here. Councilmember Gamble to appoint or approve Councilmember Williams as Mayor Pro Tem. Any other comments, questions?
He'll do a fine job.
I hear you.
That's what I heard. I heard it was really good.
He did good. Okay, with that then said and seeing no lights, we'll take a vote on the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Nice job. Okay. Based on the comments heard by City Administrator Brazel, moving on to the next item, Community Transport of Directors. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I actually have no desire to be on the Board of Directors next year, so if someone else would like to step up for that opportunity, I would be more than willing to step up. What's up?
Any nomination?
So if nobody goes, what went out?
If I make it stuck.
A staff member would go, I believe, in place of...
So we don't have to have somebody
else. We've never had...
We've never not had a member...
John Steinman was an alternate when he was here, but otherwise, I'm not aware of any staff member.
I served on the board when I was on council. I saw Councilmember Gamble's light go on, so Councilmember Gamble. I thought you got away with it.
Well, I'd like to nominate Councilmember Hanford. Is it Councilmember Hanford up for... re-election?
Is.
Yeah.
Is.
So that limits us to just three?
Yeah. No, that's right.
Well, two, actually.
Yeah. I'd like to nominate Councilmember Davis.
And I would love to do this, but I've been advised by my legal counsel.
A wise man.
No. Unfortunately, I do oversee compliance of Snohomish County transportation assets, so federal compliance, so that would be a bit of a conflict. So.
I do believe that Councilmember Gamble is just volunteered. I would
need to know what the...
When's our deadline again?
The two of you can talk.
Sure, let's learn this backwards.
I think their next meeting is in February. I have a lot of once
a month commitments. That's why I'm in all seriousness.
Moments. One afternoon.
Once a month.
I have a 1 hour meeting.
Maybe it's a or something.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to have it.
Was it Tuesdays? 3 o'clock or something like that?
That's four to hell, right?
Yeah, it was typically about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
3 o'clock.
Yeah, just can't
remember the day.
We have until the next meeting, which is in February, we can bring that one back for discussion and consideration.
Bring that one back, there you go.
Yeah. All right. I will have City Administrator Brazel speak just a little bit about the Crenshaw Creek Flood Control District Board, Joint Board, and the importance of that. I know there's an attachment to review and help the council did, but the Administrator Brazel.
Thank you.
On that.
Yeah, it is an important role. As you know, we pay into the French Creek Drainage District every year an annual fee. They do work hard to keep that fee down. Basically, it's a pumping fee. How much money it costs to pump the water, the flood waters out of the valley over the dike, basically is what you're paying for. In addition to staff time, there's one staff member, that type of thing. So staff is involved, somebody from Public Works typically, and somebody from finance is involved. And historically, a council member has attended those meetings. And they only have meetings, a few meetings a year, just prior to budget time. So it's not a real labor-intensive thing. Usually it's 7 a.m. in the morning, so you can get in and get out. And they're usually held at Lord Hill Farms between Monroe and Snohomish.
Councilmember Williams is currently on the board, for the joint board, along with Jacob Roberts and Diane Nelson. Any interest in continuing that?
Sure. So moved. Councilman Gamble.
All right.
That was so moved for Councilmember
Motion. And that motion was made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Pettit.
Sure.
To appoint Councilmember Williams to the French Creek Flood Control District Joint Board. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Snow Orange County tomorrow. Currently, Councilmember Gearing with Councilmember Gamble as an alternate. Councilmember Gearing, any?
Well, I'll say that Councilmember Gamble was an excellent backup. It was a fantastic backup this year. Right. Always there when the call came.
Never came.
I have done this for the last 2 years. Certainly would be open to anybody else who might be interested. It's third Wednesday of the month. Chance to meet a lot of other elected officials. It's in Everett. Specifically for anybody who may be for sure, at least will be guaranteed to be here for at least 2 more years. A great opportunity to find out about what's going on planning-wise. It's planning-specific, transportation planning, things of that nature. And Councilmember Cutback was an excellent backup the first year that I did it. So I don't think...
Call never came.
So. Mark Lankammer has attended in the past. If I couldn't attend, so we did have planning staff. But they do. It is an elected official type of thing. It's been really interesting. If somebody else is... I can continue to do it, but if somebody else is interested, I'd prefer someone else did. But if no one else, then I'll still do it.
The SCT's mission, as it says here, is to adopt a shared vision to guide effective growth management. And certainly with what we've done going in Monroe, I think there's a good opportunity for Monroe to be have some really good input and provide direction there. So, Councilmember Kim.
Thank you. Is it one Wednesday?
One Wednesday a month, 6:30 to 8:30-ish. East, it's the old county building, not the new county building, but the old one, so you walk right into the permitting. Yeah. It's the conference room, and
I'd be willing to do
that. Thank you. I think that's great.
Yeah, don't buy into any of the voodoo theories that Councilmember Gearing has had, given the fact that he had an accident, a car breakdown.
Every time I went to meeting, something happened in my car. That was crazy.
Yeah, second. All right. Well, since Councilmember Kemp has volunteered to serve in this role, do we have a motion to accept his...
So moved.
Second. Yes, yeah. Okay, motion has been made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Hanford to appoint Councilmember Camp to Snow Orange County tomorrow. Councilmember Gearing?
No, next item.
Oh, we have a vote for you. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, very good. All right, two council members to review and sign approval of bills. We need to know where to put that box every Tuesday night. Davis and Camp are currently in Councilmember Gearing.
I'd like to nominate Camp and Davis.
Second.
All right, do you accept?
Sure.
Motion is made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Gamble. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And that was good one. All right. We have more. Yes. Oh, yes. All right. Our legislative committee members. Currently, there are three council legislative committees that each scheduled to meet once per month. And Council Member Gearing.
Thanks. I've had the opportunity. I've been here long enough to be able to serve on all of them at some point. I've been on the Finance and Human Resources just for the last year, but certainly would like to encourage giving everybody an opportunity. So I'm just going to fill in gaps this time for anything else that might be outstanding based on what others want. With regard to the one that I was just on, I was on the Finance and Human Resources one this time. I think that given the nature of spreading it around a little bit and certainly having people who are going to be here for guaranteed for more than 2 years, I'd certainly like to see some of those guys step up. I know Councilmember Cutback, you've been on for maybe 3 years on that one. I've been on for a year.
maybe giving someone else a shot. So I'd certainly be, and Councilmember Williams, quite frankly, has been the driving force with the reserve policy. I think everybody would agree that he's been very important with the stuff that's come out of that council. I would nominate to move forward in that. If council members, perhaps Camp and Gamble, along with Councilmember Williams, would like to serve on that vote, so I would put that forward.
I would like to.
Yeah, but what was the only question I had was it was right before, right?
It's at 6 on the third Tuesday.
Is there any possibility it could be a different Tuesday?
You guys could work that out amongst yourselves.
Yeah. Okay. Because I have a commitment on the third Tuesday of the month before council. Okay. Yeah.
But then I would remove that then.
Okay, motion has been made to appoint Councilmember Williams Campbell to the Finance and Human Resources
Committee.
Correct. Yeah, I'm sorry. Is there a second?
Second.
A motion has been made by Councilmember Gehring and seconded by Councilmember Cuddeback. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? One down. Okay, that was good. Legislative Affairs, Transportation, and Planning. May I just
that's a huge. That, it used to be two different ones.
Yeah, that transportation planning. I was going to save this for later, but for council members who are interested in transportation and planning, I have a meeting this Friday with Congresswoman Del Benny, and one of the items that we will be speaking about specifically is transportation issues related to Highway 2 here in Monroe and the impact that it has on traffic. So whoever is on board, on that board, since we only have three, I would like to also open up that meeting to you to attend. I think it would be important to have you there. We will be discussing other issues. There's some other issues that I have for her. But that is one that will be taking up some significant time, I'm sure. Actually, we only have an hour, but that's all right. Okay, so with that said, for thought, opportunity to meet Council, Congresswoman Del Benny goes with the Transportation and Planning Committee. Councilmember Gehring.
Thanks. I'd like to nominate Councilmember Cuddeback Camp and whoever else might be interested in Councilmember Davis and raise the pen. Unless, Councilmember Davis raised his pen. So there you go.
And would there be an opportunity to talk about the coal trains and see
absolutely.
If there? And that's why I wanted to serve on that committee and sure. possibly have meetings this year and look at, you know, what's our policy on that? What as a city we can do? So.
And that is very good, and hopefully the Transportation and Planning Committee can meet right afterwards because I had asked City Administrator Brazel to ask our Director Heilberg to pen a letter or possibly a resolution that we would send to the which department is it now? I can't even remember who was ever seen.
I'm the Corps of Engineers.
Yes, Corps of Engineers. And two things that I've asked for that I'd like to have presented to the Corps of Engineers is an overpass from the city of Monroe in two separate locations. So chances of that happening are slim to none, but
gotta ask.
I've got to ask. Don't ask, don't get. So, all right, Councilmember Gehring, you appointed, was that a motion?
Yeah, it was. That is a motion.
And is there a second?
Second.
All right. Motion is for Finance and Human for Transportation and Planning, Councilmember Cuddeback.
Camp and Davis.
Camp and Davis. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, were you quick? Councilmember Gehring.
Making it easy, I would like to nominate myself and Councilmember Hanford for what's left, which is the Legislative Affairs Committee.
We got Public Works Parks.
Isn't that all part of the, that's all part of the.
Oh, story. Transportation Planning, Public
guys,
Works Parks.
Last year you guys combined it all in one. Yeah.
Legislative Affairs, Councilmember Gehring and Hanford have been nominated by Councilmember Gehring. Anybody else?
Anybody else want to jump in?
Yeah, I could have done that for a couple of years, and what I mean by done that is I don't think we've ever met.
So I'd like to give someone else the opportunity.
You can have me.
I think we'll have an opportunity this year.
All right, Councilmember Davis. So, motion to appoint Councilmember Gearing, Hamford, and Davis to the Legislative Affairs Committee.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Councilmember Gearing, seconded by Councilmember Gamble. Councilmember Campbell.
No, I'm just going to make another motion about the pockets.
Okay. All right. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. Councilmember Cam. I'd
like to move to extend the meeting past 10 o'clock.
Second.
Motion to made by Councilmember Cam, seconded by Councilmember Gearing to extend the meeting past 10 p.m. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I think, boy, but now we're really moving quick.
Mayor, I have a question before you move on.
Yes, Councilmember Williams.
So did we agree to switch the meetings for the Finance and Human Resources?
Yeah. You know what? We can do that by just consensus or mutual agreement.
They can do it at night.
Pick a night that works for all three of you.
Okay. Would it work to just flop that one with the Legislative Affairs and move Finance and Human Resources the first Tuesdays?
Sounds good to me. If it's good to council, and we'll do that. Okay. Bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was definitely well. Moving on to the last item under final action is the approval of City of Monroe's Municipal Court proposal. And with that, call Chief Quinzer to the podium.
Once again, I'm just thrilled to be here. answer to the two questions that I can remember, I believe it was just two questions. One, yes, we can get back into the court, district court system. In fact, there's an RCW that covers the process. And the second had to do with the jury room that we were talking about and discussions with the city administrator Brazel. We have decided to build a room right off his office. There used to be a room there, and which would accommodate a jury. And we did some checking with the court to find out how many jury trials we've had in the last year. And I've had two different reports. One said none, and the other said maybe two. So I don't feel that room will be utilized very often. I think probably city staff will use it much more than a district court jury will. And also the part-time judge, the court administrator and the court clerk would be housed. I think we agreed in the temporary building right next door. And the city, they would have a direct line that would be the municipal court line, so it wouldn't be interfering with the front or with our police department. Any additional questions?
We'll move on. So your motion or your recommended action tonight, Chief, is a motion to authorize the mayor to sign a letter of intent to make an agreement with Snohomish County Economic Division Court. Correct?
Yes.
So moved.
Second.
Motion is made by Councilmember Gearing and seconded by Councilmember Hanford. Councilmember Cutter.
Thank you. Chief, I want to thank you for answering my questions that I had last week. I did have one more additional. Under logistics in the proposal, it had something, the Judicial Information Service is a required statewide computer system. Do we already use that? That's nothing new that we have to do. We already use that. Correct. Okay. So I'm going to approve this proposal tonight. I still have a little bit of concerns over just security, and the system we're using now works well, and I'm not sure that the strain or the burden of taking this on is maybe worth the benefit, but I'm voting for the motion because I trust your recommendation and your judgment on this, and I'm deferring to your wisdom and your expertise. So I will be voting yes. Thank you.
Any other comments, questions from the chief? Hearing no comments, seeing no lights. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, chief. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Council, it's that part of the evening here where we get to hear reports from both you and staff. We'll begin with council member Gary.
Thank you. I'd just like to publicly say that I express support again for our student representative Toronto and the project up at the high school. And I really hope we get some orange and black paint up there. Absolutely have my support with that. And so hopefully there is no undue pressure on you in a negative way. If there is, I think that would be an issue. So just like to say you have my support continued with that. So thank you very much.
And does your support include a brush and roller?
Absolutely. Ladder? Oh, man, you kidding me? My kids would love to be up there.
All right.
Awesome. Love it.
Councilor Dobek.
Just that the Jamie Bendel run is coming up at the end of the month, and I participated last year, and I would really encourage council to participate, and it would be nice to see council out there running the race. Maybe we could have a little competition. So my hope is that nice to have a city team and support out there. So it was a really good first race last year.
How long is it?
5K.
Oh, 3.1, yeah.
Oh, it's only, yeah, that's right.
So I'm looking forward to it.
All right, thank you, Councilor Pettibikes. And to echo your statement, it was a phenomenal turnout last year, and look forward to that again. A terrible loss for our community, but a wonderful way to remember this. Councilor Williams?
No.
Councilor Cam?
I have a question. Does the City Hall have a donut rule?
A donut rule?
Yes, if you get your picture in the paper.
Yes.
It's an ice cream rule. I want to echo the sentiments of Councilmember Gehring. Your job. Forward working with you as we continue.
So that there's no there's some clarity maybe with regards to the interaction between council and our student representative, Councilmember Camp, as part of the processes, we'll be meeting on a regular basis with our student representative. Probably didn't happen during the month of December with everything that was going on, but I do understand that you guys are connecting here shortly, and we just appreciate your support for Representative Perron and his efforts. All right, thank you, Councilmember Davis.
Nothing.
Councilmember Campbell. Councilmember Hammond.
Yeah, I will be next weekend, at the beginning of the week, I'll be in the foster parent training retreat. I went to that year, and I'm not quite sure if I'm going to have the time for the meeting. We will just have to see.
Where's that next week?
Grable Flies.
Grable Flies? Yeah.
Yeah.
No snow.
Well, we have a light meeting next week, and. I would only ask that you have a great experience, a great time down there, and do not rush back. Rather have you home safely and cure yourself. Okay, thank you. Staff members, we do have one report that I would like to call on first, and that is from Diane Nelson, Finance.
Yeah. This past week, one of the police patrol cars got wrecked, and so it's covered by insurance. There's $1,000 deductible, and so we have the need to replace it right away. And it's not in the budget, and so we didn't want to spend the money, and then it'll be in the insurance proceeds, and the expenditure will both be in the first budget amendment that I bring this spring to you. But because of the dollar amount, I need council approval since it's not in the budget to go ahead and buy the police car.
What's the dollar amount?
$36,000 fully loaded.
All right, we have a motion to approve the purchase of a new police vehicle for the amount of $36,000 fully loaded. Motion to be made by Councilmember Davis and seconded by Councilmember Gehring. Do we have to add that to the agenda?
Do we have to add that first before we can take a motion?
The motion to approve the purchase of the police vehicle?
Yeah, do we have to actually have to add that?
We can do that in council consensus if it's going to come back as a formal budget amendment.
Okay, council consensus that we take a motion. I see that's not even an okay. The motion stands. Edie, did you get the motion maker and the seconder?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Thank you, Diane. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll move around the tables here fairly quickly, but don't want to miss anything. Paul, anything additional this evening? Jeff, anything? Mike?
No.
Denise?
Yeah.
You okay? There, hi. How you doing? Ben, anything for you? And Diane? Deputy Chief, how are you this evening?
Deputy Chief, I'm great. How are you, Mayor?
Good to see you. Thank you for being here. Chief, anything further tonight? All right. Mr. Fowler. Hey, Fred. Student Representative Ronald.
Yeah. So I'd just like to say I was really impressed with the presentation that was given today. It seems like a great thing for the city. However, I would like to mention, as this is the first time that I've heard this going on, some questions that were, you know, instantly brought to my mind. I don't know how in depth this has been looked at by the council, so you might already know the answers to these questions, but these are just a couple things that I would recommend that you kind of question or look into. First one is, this program, the idea or the intent is to bring jobs into Monroe. Obviously, because if they're doing projects, there's going to be, you know, builders, or you have to build these projects. The other question is, what happens when the building projects are done? Obviously, people are going to be out. If the buildings are done, then they're going to be out of jobs again. So it's really only a temporary thing, it seems like.
No. Let me answer that question for you real quick, and I appreciate you asking that. The job is not the construction. The job is the result of the project. So in other words, if a hotel is built and you hire 10 people to serve as, you know, maid service or bellman, night manager, auditor, front desk person, those are jobs that are a result of that project. That's a direct result. The indirect result may be that because of the building of a hotel, for instance, the coffee house down the street has to hire 2 additional people to help serve the folks who are now staying at the hotel. So those are indirect jobs. So the jobs that are created are not, temporary jobs like, I was going to go to federal here, but I'm not going there. They really are to create permanent jobs in the city of Monroe, specific to the business, and indirect jobs that are supportive of that business as well. So it's not related to construction, which is temporary.
Okay. My next question is, what happens if a project falls short during the actual process? Hypothetically, if they get caught up with something with the municipal code, or for some reason there's a stalling where they can't move forward, or we can't move forward. What would happen is because I mean you would the city would be forced to continue to, you know, re-sign this contract with this program. But if they can't reach an agreement within like the 3 to 5 years, then what would we do?
It's a good question too, and I'll see if I can answer, and Jeff and Brett can add to this as well. But once the project applicant has identified the project, that project goes through a vetting process through the federal government. The federal government approves that project. Investors are going to invest based on the viability of that project. That project is then required to meet all local regulations, ordinances, and design guidelines, things like that. Once that project has been vetted, approved by the federal government, and investors are coming, they're really the role of the city. The role that the city takes is now simply an administrative role related to any permits and so on and so forth. So it's no different than if you wanted to partner with
you know, three of your friends, and you guys, you know, pooled your money together and decided that you wanted to build a coffee espresso house. And halfway through the project, you found that you couldn't complete the project or something like that. That's why Jesse was saying that all the investments and the projects themselves are risk investments. They're risk. So there is potential that a project may start and not be able to finish. But in terms of the city's role in that, we were the matchmaker. And not all marriages work, as you know. And but hopefully they will. But our role is really limited to matchmaking. And I believe that as part of our process, which, you know, the next time we have it, if you're available, we'll do this. But any project that comes to the city for development, we have what's called as a pre-application meeting with that project or that developer. And in that meeting, we sit down with how many, 13 people at times? 13 members of staff, maybe the most, and go through their plans for the project, and we vet out within the city's area of responsibility any of the needs that particular developer may have to meet. And so before going into any project, they're pretty well versed on what the expectations are now.
Okay. And my last question is, because it seems like the city has no liability within, or like their job is to make the bucket, or you know, whatever the example was. Because of the fact that they have no liability, does the city really have a say in what projects are approved, and if you know, if there's something that doesn't look good for the city, it can still be approved, and what's the city's role?
And that's the best question of all, and that really goes to the question of because the city is the owner of the regional center, for instance. Let's say that two individuals come to the city and say, "I'd like to build a hotel." I use that. I mean, we may need two hotels. I'm not sure, but the city says one applicant comes and says, "I'd like to pay my fee, $22,000 to $29,000, whatever that might be, to go back into that bucket that we were talking about earlier." Another person comes and says, "I'd like to build a hotel as well." We can accept one without accepting the other, because we control or maintain control over that bucket. Now that second hotel can say, "Okay, fine, I'm going to go out and apply for EB-5 on my own," but then they are not responsible for the $225,000. So what we've done here over the last few years is, one, council has been very supportive, and I appreciate that, is we've created an identity here. The adventure begins here in Monroe. I mean, you see that around us right now, just in the paint. I mean, that reflects the website, which reflects a lot of the activities that have been going on throughout town. And so with that said, that's going to be part of the marketing of the EB-5 Regional Center. And so our anticipation is that those types of supportive projects are going to come to Monroe. But we're also going to be looking for things like manufacturing and distribution and things like that. There could be a retail aspect as well. So we can say, you know, no. But the reality is that this is where my personal stance is. I would hope that we don't get into the business of saying you're acceptable and you're not. Because it's a way really here to help free enterprise gain the necessary funding to make their dream come true. And so if you came to me and said, "I want to be part of this, but I'd like to open up a..." What do we have? 100 of them in the town.
Teriyaki.
Tire stores.
Oh, Lord. Tires.
I'm going to go teriyaki. You know, you want to go to teriyaki. You know, it's not my role to say that that's a bad plan. But council may say direct staff they should so choose. That would not be a reasonable project for this EB-5. But ultimately, the decision, comes down to free market enterprise, free enterprise, and the market itself. You, as a business owner, would probably not likely bring a business plan for a teriyaki place in Monroe because we have, I think, five still in town. So you as a businessman or developer would most likely bring something that's going to be supportive, fits the community, and has a very good chance of succeeding.
That's it.
And all right. How's school going? Good?
It's going.
All right. City Manager Bradley?
I, too, will be out of town next week. I'll be in Southern California with my beautiful wife, Katie, that's in the audience this evening. And so you guys will have to muddle through that one. Draft agenda for January 23rd, 2013.
Before you go on, Councilmember, can you play on?
Yeah, thanks. I just realized we didn't, for the SET, a backup, and I'm happy to serve as your backup if you can't make one of the meetings. And I expect no phone calls, just like Councilmember Cutback and Gamble. Okay. But we do, I didn't know we needed to vote on that or not, so before we get into business, but if we don't, I don't know, if, I don't remember if we did that last
year. I just saw seven or six heads go up and down.
Yeah, so I just wanted to put that on.
It
did. Identify
let it be said.
Sounds great. Very good. Under announcements and presentations, we have the audit excerpt conference. That's with the state auditor. We have a consent agenda. Under new business, we have 2013 goals. Specifically, we'll be talked about police department goals and the parks and recreation department. They'll be going into details on that. Under final action of the ordinance adopting findings regarding Chapter 18.70, marijuana-related issues. Study session topics, we have department reports and the draft agenda for February 5th, 2013. Any additions or deletions?
That at a future study session, maybe in February, that we can add social media and having a discussion around use and making sure satisfying public disclosure requirements. And so I was hoping maybe February 12th, it doesn't look like there's much on there, and it's a study session. Kind of looking at what other cities do and making sure we have an open discussion about it.
I'd second that.
In anticipation of that, on Friday we had a meeting and I had asked Denise about the seven laptops that are sitting here. I think that in conjunction with that discussion, we'd also consider the council use of these laptops for city business. And so with that, if we should create a policy with social media or whatever, it's all done on the city laptop.
Sure.
So if there ever a question, the city laptop is then turned in. Thanks for bringing that up because we just had that conversation on Friday. And thank you for reminding me because I meant to say that tonight.
The 12th, is that an acceptable date? Great. Thank you.
And the laptops will be part of that.
Sure.
Actually, I guess the question is there any objection to council utilizing these laptops for council and city business? Because if not, then I would like to direct Denise, as she has time, because she's got a couple of other projects, to begin the process of transitioning these laptops for council use, which means you can take it home.
Planning Commission use these? Planning Commission?
So,
planning commission uses.
Yeah, they do utilize these, but they prefer paper copies, so we may go back to that.
Yes, which solves the problem, I think.
What's that?
Do we currently have a policy around using city computers and detailing out, not using personal? I know you have a staff one, you know, something maybe that we sign. Do you know?
We can get copies for council to review, but we do have
sure.
a policy that covers that.
Okay.
And of course, Denise will have to do a little work, software and the like, on these prior to council taking them home.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is there a city like image? Like at work, we have a company image that's put on with that. Is there that sort of a thing where
right.
certain sites are restricted as they should be and all that kind of stuff? So great.
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect.
All right. We may not have ready by the 12th. I didn't want to put Denise on the spot there and say that, but if she's able to begin that process, I'd certainly like to see you move forward on that.
Yeah, I guess the only, from a social media perspective, it's virtual. I guess that's the only thing. So, I mean, we don't really need to take this home.
Well,
so, I mean, that's one of the things maybe we can talk about is that.
On the 12th, right?
Yeah, on the 12th. Because, I mean, well, that's a great offer. The last thing I need is another piece of technology. Pulling ahead, right? Yeah. So,
okay, Councilmember Gamble, to that point, the concern that has been expressed that I've heard from a number of different cities, towns, and even here within City Council is the use of your home computer to access city work. So, currently, I use this is my mechanism for city business, and it gets hard to read those things sometimes until I'm here in the office. You've got a nice little iPad thing, so you can use it however it's your personal iPad. This is a city.
Right. I guess the difference is that I don't store, there's nothing, I mean, I'll give it to you, right? There's no city business on here. Everything is housed on the server.
Yeah.
Right? So it's all, there's nothing saved on the device.
Yeah.
So that would be that, maybe we can talk through them.
My purpose for recommending this is just out of an abundance of caution.
Yeah,
good discussion for February 12th.
Yes, exactly.
Agreed.
Yep, absolutely. So we will do that. We went a little longer this evening because of the presentation tonight, which was well worth it, especially the recognition of the officers again and the presentation with regards to evening 5. Councilmember Camp.
Do we need a motion to close?
No.
We have an executive session.
No.
Oh, we do have an executive session.
Sorry. I was just about to inform the public that we do have the need for an executive session, and so we'll go into executive session for 15 minutes, and I'll have the city attorney provide the reason for that.
What's that?
2:30, you're going to 40. For the purpose of discussing collective bargaining, negotiating strategy, the executive session will last 15 minutes, after which the council will take action in session.
Okay. Now we will then go into executive session at this time. Pertaining to collective bargaining, city council may take action following the words of the executive session. We are now back on regular
session. Make the motion that they have.
I have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
And made by Gary and Councilmember Hanford, seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
The rest of the property.
Are you meeting with the transportation group?